Well, good morning, and welcome to the October 7th, 2019 meeting of the Chelan County Public Utility District Commission. I'd like to thank everyone for coming today and also remind you to please silence any electronic devices you may have brought with you. Today's meeting is both a study and a business session, so the study session will start at 10 a.m. this morning, and the afternoon business session will start at 1. We welcome the public input at our meetings to remind you that the meetings are recorded. If you wish to address any item on the agenda, we ask that you come to the microphone and please state your name, address for the record, and limit your comments, please, to 3 minutes. Today we have all five commissioners present, General Manager Steve Wright, General Counsel Katie Yount, and Teresa Boucher sitting in as Assistant Clerk of the Board. So, Tim, would you please lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
My team.
Morning, Commissioners. I know there's an extremely busy schedule, so I'll perform the safety minute this morning and let you get on with the important work ahead, although this is important also. Just going to kind of revisit in 2019 when we started in January, February. I actually carried this book around quite a bit, and it focuses on our behaviors and how our behaviors are truly affected by our mindset. So I'm going to show this quick video. It's actually a video that's a story out of this book. It's a very reduced scene of the video. And then we'll walk into just what the meanings are behind it.
Two homicide suspects. We proceed to the home. As we're making our approach, the occupants become aware of our presence, and we smack the door immediately with the ram. Door flies open, in go a couple of flashbangs. These flashbangs detonate. We move through the house. When we enter this threshold, it's complete pandemonium. There are people running everywhere, diving under beds, hiding in closets. We've got screaming children clinging onto our legs as we're trying to clear this house. We get everybody collected and secured, and we kind of corral them into this living room area, this dining room area that had been furnished with two couches. With all of these people, we're talking probably two dozen people in this room. It is incredibly loud and made worse by the fact that these babies that these mothers have are screaming. And I look around trying to explain to people what's going on. I can't get a word in. And I look around and I see that Bob Evans, my point man, has disappeared. And I go looking for him. And so I walk into the kitchen, and I see Bob in full tactical gear standing with his back to me facing the sink. I get a little closer to see what's going on, and I discover Bob standing at the sink mixing baby bottles. I mean, here's this guy, the toughest of these alpha males, standing there mixing baby bottles, and I'm just shocked by this. And he looks at me, kind of smiles knowingly, kind of shrugs, carries these bottles out to the dining room area and distributes them to the mothers of the crying children. And this whole scene shifts automatically. Everybody calms down. I'm able to explain why we're there. And I just was amazed by the radical transformation in an instant. All of that hinged on Bob's responsiveness.
And you'll see on that book there that states seeing beyond ourselves, thinking about others. Little history, that specific Kansas City SWAT team, they actually were the most complained about in the entire department, actually throughout the state. Their mindset was, we're going after these bad people, they get what they deserve, and we're going to treat them the way they need to be treated. That was their mindset. There was actually a lot of injuries that occurred during those arrests that were occurring. Our behaviors are absolutely a result of what our mindset is. So the, The mindset informs our behaviors. The things that we choose create our behaviors. Those create the results, which in this situation, their mindset was, again, these people are bad people, and we're going to treat them the way that we need to treat them. Because of the complaints and the lawsuits, it got to a point where the city management wanted different results. So with those results, they began to instruct the SWAT team, here's what we want you to do, here's how we want you to act, and here's what you're going to do. When you force behaviors, that's a situation where we end up micromanaging people, right? Because as long as you're on site, they'll do what you've asked them to do or told them to do. But when you're not there, they'll revert back to their normal behaviors because that's what their mindset is. So our goal through this year here at the PUD has been to really shift the mindset of employees so that we think differently and that we're doing the best we can all the time, no matter who is there watching. And so when you lead with the mindset, which we've been doing with human performance, we've really been focusing on how we think, how we react to errors. And I think throughout the district, we've been really setting the example that we do look at things differently. We've had 27 copies of this book, and I don't think we've had more than 3 returned to us as they continue to roll through people. So I think it's working really well. If you change the mindset, then your behaviors will follow, and you'll get your targeted results. It took the captain of that group and the lead man to take their training. They went to the Arbinger Institute, and this reverts back to the last one that you've seen with the goofy dancer at the gorge. If you remember, the main message there was that the first followers. So they went through this training, but it wasn't until Bob Evans stepped up and put it into action with those baby bottles and set an example for his team. This exact same team now virtually has 0 complaints against them. They actually get a lot of compliments from the people they arrest because they were treated with such respect. They were treated like people. And so this is just a quick example of how our mindsets can make such a difference, because even though they're accomplishing the same task, they're still arresting the people, they're doing what they need to do, the people now feel respected, the complaints are virtually nothing, and there are no lawsuits against them. So it's a great example how changing the mindset can really change the culture and help. Any questions?
That's a powerful message.
So this is from the Arbinger Institute, which just turned the light on for me, their work on self-deception is, in my mind, some of the most powerful work that there is. So thank you for sharing that, because I'm going to make sure I get that book. That's a great organization.
Yeah, The Art of Deception.
Yeah.
Any other questions?
Thanks, Tim. That's valuable information.
Thank you. Well done.
Very well done.
So next up, commissioners, we want to get into the regular study session agenda. I'm going to invite Mike Coleman to come up.
We want to do the consent agenda.
I'm sorry. Okay. Yeah, I jumped right ahead. No, I warned you I was on cold medicine today. my
know,
first flaw already.
The full agenda, and we're eager. So, but commissioners, we have a consent agenda in front of us. Do I hear any suggestions?
I think it's been recommended that we could move Resolution 14 to the consent agenda, and that's fine with me.
Okay. Been moved. Seconded?
Second.
Been moved and seconded. Any discussion? Hearing no discussion, all those in favor of moving Resolution 14 to the consent agenda say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? The ayes have it.
Okay. And, of course, I jumped over 2 items, so the next item is is to the board president.
Yes. Well, at this moment, I would like to remember a past general manager, Jerry Kopp. Jerry was general manager of the Chelan County PUD from 1982 to 1992. For those of you that are old enough to remember him here, not many of us left. I knew Jerry quite well myself, and what a gentleman. And not only a gentleman, but an intellectual as well. He was a person who was able to relate to Wall Street at the highest level, but also each and every employee here at the PUD. Just a tremendous gentleman. He had 30 years of service here at the Chelan County PUD. He's a Go Cougs WSU grad, graduated in the 50s with an electrical engineering degree out of WSU. Proud to say he celebrated his 65th wedding anniversary with his wife, Barbara. A real leader and a real gentleman and a real intellectual, and he will be sorely missed. And he's been loved by staff. There was not one single member of staff that I've talked to that worked here when Jerry was here that had anything but glowing, loving words and adjectives for that gentleman. And I remind you that he spent 10 years as a general manager, so he had plenty of time to mess things up, and he didn't. So just wanted to take this moment and just a second of silence to remember former general manager Jerry Cobb. Thank you. Yes, please, feel free to make a comment.
So I knew Jerry really well. When I decided to run for PUD commissioner, I was really, really green. I didn't have a clue what I was doing. I thought, well, I'll just read a lot of books and I'll read some of the history. And so I called Jerry and asked his advice. And so he said, well, let's meet and talk. And so we did, and we talked a lot, and he asked me some questions, and I could tell he was a really kind, nice man. In fact, I always say my husband's the nicest man on the planet. Jerry might have been the second nicest man on the planet. He just was a kind, compassionate man. So anyway, he said, yeah, I'll help you. And of course, I asked for his support, and he said, I'll help you. And not too long after that, his wife Barbara called me, and he was out doorbelling for me. He was out knocking on doors for me. So anyway, he loved the PUD like no other. He just had such a passion for the PUD, and he's been coming to the retiree luncheons for years, and he came to the last one. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you remember, and he's so passionate about the PUD. When he gets up, and he always wants to speak and say something and say thank you, and, you know, he just, you know, always wants to pass on praise and say, you guys are doing great, you're doing the right thing. But it always comes to tears because he's just so emotional and loved the PUD so much. So I'll miss him. He's a great man.
Yes. Mr. Bolts.
I go back to about the same time frame as Commissioner Congdon just spoke about when I made the decision to run for the commission, and it was interesting. People were trying to pit myself against my opponent, that I was trying to beat this particular individual. And I knew that my chances of election were really slim if I didn't have the support of Jerry Cobb. So I called Jerry and asked if we could meet, you know, for coffee. And I'm assuming it was going to be a 10, 15, maybe 20-minute conversation. And it was an hour interview. I thought I was going to interview him. And it wasn't that at all. It was an hour of being interviewed by Jerry in terms of what the PUD meant to me, because he didn't want to endorse anyone who didn't have that same passion and concern about the organization that he did. And at the end of it, I think the statement that he made may have set the direction, the tone for the election. He just said, you know, what I really want you to concentrate on is you're not running against your opponent. You're running for the PUD. And if you concentrate on running for the PUD and don't concentrate on your opponent, you're going to have a better chance of being elected. And I think that statement really spoke deeply about Jerry's literally love and commitment to this organization and what it meant to the people of Chelan County. Because as a commissioner, you're for the PUD, you're not opposed to anyone else. And his wisdom, and every time I would run, because I have four-year terms, every time I'd run, I'd call Jerry and ask for another endorsement, and it was going to be another coffee. And it was not quite an hour in the subsequent elections, but close, where he was still checking in on where's your passion level, what are you caring about, what are the issues, how's that, you know, in favor of the PUD, you know, what about the ratepayers? You know, I've listened here for about 15 minutes. You haven't said anything about the ratepayers yet. You know, so he was tremendously supportive, but he also was very clear in terms of his expectation. If you were going to sit here, what set of values were you going to bring to this every time you showed up at a meeting? And so forever grateful for his guidance, his wisdom, and then over time to be able to get to know him as a person, and he and Barbara and what made them great. It also was nice that he had an older vehicle, and I have an older vehicle, so we had plenty of things to talk about. But love Jerry, and appreciated his leadership, and thanks for listening.
Wonderful. Well, he's touched the lives of many people here, not only at the Chelan PUD, but also in the community. He's done a lot of good work, and the county is better for it. Okay, now, Steve, we can move on.
You're ready for me. All right. Sorry for jumping the gun. Next up, Mike Coleman's going to come up and talk. You know, we've had some conversation about fiber as part of the strategic plan. We've been thinking a lot about what it takes to make the fiber business self-sustainable, particularly as we look beyond just the current expansion program and looking at financial metrics to use for this business. Mike's going to be discussing that for you today, not an action item. Just wanted you to be aware of the work that's going on here and see if you have any thoughts to offer for us.
Thank you, Steve. Good morning, Commissioners. Mike Coleman, Managing Director of Fiber and Telecommunications. And I'm going to move right on into the presentation because Steve did a great job of leading into it. When we talk about long-term rate planning for fiber, I wanted to start with where we are today. What accomplishments have we achieved under the current plan? 76% of the county now has access to the PUD's broadband network. We're on track with PPB funding to reach 85 to 90% of the premises passed in the county by 2026. We have a take rate of 49.5% with expectations to reach 50% by the end of the year. And that's tremendous because when I got here, the take rate was hovering right at slightly below 40%. We're in good financial shape today, so that's another good achievement. So why am I here today? The strategic planning survey results for fiber financial self-sustainability, looking at tools to improve the sustainability and the potential revenue impact of this recommendation. From the strategic planning update, and you saw the same slide with water and wastewater, there was a voice from the community saying that it should be balanced with some subsidization, kind of a 50-50 mix there. So what does financially self-sustaining mean? It's the ability to pay all systems cost with decreased share of capital funding support from the wholesale electric revenues. And the fiber expansion plan, the PPB program, would continue to be funded through that program. We have a lot of tools to look at, rate adjustments, external capital funding opportunities such as grants or loans, and we have some stopgap temporary type tools. One is the PPB funding for the fiber expansion, and then some capital funding support from wholesale electric revenues for shared assets. So fiber's rates are kind of unique within the district because we're wholesale. We sell the services to service providers and not to the ultimate customers. We're truly a wholesale operation. Our rates are established to the service providers through a consideration of a number of factors, market rates, cost of service, system capacity, and other factors that are directly related to the provision of wholesale telecommunications services. The impact of market rates are monitored on an ongoing basis, and the fiber rates are monitored to reflect those market rates. We are and have seen a change in those market rates over the last couple of years. We do ask the service providers, we work with them in getting input on our rate structures. And so that leads me into some what-if scenarios and assumptions. We are updating some targets to support the financial sustainability. They are working on a new methodology and changing the shared asset funding requirement. The system share is 0% of cost of shared assets 2020 through 2022 and 50% of the cost annually thereafter. So that little subsidization is slowing down. The PPB expansion efforts continue to be funded through the Public Power Benefit Program. And the National Electrical Safety Code Make Ready is funded through fiber for direct expenses. So we are bearing the burden of that. So in looking at tools to measure, monitor sustainability, and particularly to inform long-term rate guidance and provide the ability to measure our financial performance, we've revised the calculation for operating coverage ratio and the debt service percentage of revenues. We were using an operating expense ratio, and we went to the same standard that water and wastewater did. That measures the revenue, rates and fees, ability to cover all costs of operating and maintaining the system to include infrastructure costs, and that target would be 80%. And the reason we're not looking at 100% on that particular metric is because so much of the expansion capital is provided to us, and we don't have to recover everything to meet that because of that gift of capital. The debt service percentage of revenue, we currently have no debt, but this is a measure of debt affordability, and we're setting a target of less than 10%. We don't have any plans to have to borrow money, but setting that target to offer flexibility if circumstances change in the future. And last is liquidity, which gives us resiliency, and it's a minimum fund set aside to cover costs in the event of an emergency or revenue downturn. We've continued with the target of $2 million, but we have a desired level of $10 million, and I'll talk a little bit more on that in the next couple of slides. So our operating coverage ratio, operating revenues over operating expense to include depreciation, we looked at it with both a 1% revenue increase and a 3% revenue increase, and you see it goes from 90% down into the 70s, and then through 2028, it climbs back up. The difference is on the 3% rate increase, it brings us back into the 90% range. The 1% would only get us back to the 80% range. And the importance of that will show up in the liquidity slide. Debt service, again, we're zeros all the way down the board, and we have no plan borrowing. The liquidity, the cash, which is an extremely important measure to us. If you look at the 1% and 3% columns, you see it drops very, very rapidly through 2023, and that's a lot of the NESC expenses and other expenses that are associated with the expansion. The difference is with the 3% revenue increase, by 2028, we're getting back up close to our desired $10 million level, whereas the 1% would have left us with a very bare minimum of $2 million.
Mike, that the current status, does that reflect the infusion of the public power benefit dollars?
Yes, it does. Yes, it does. So known unknowns for the fiber system and long-term rate planning. We have the question of less than expected take rates in the PPB growth area. We know we're experiencing system growth and expansion. One of the reasons for that desired $10 million level is we are seeing subdivisions pop up in the county, and we want to be able to serve those subdivisions, so that $10 million gives us the flexibility to actually expand to those subdivisions on an as-needed basis. There's always changes in project cost and timelines, including the NESC compliance, so that's a big unknown for us. Technology change impacts on cost, and those can be both positive or negative. We are making some changes to the network next year that should impact it positively, but then down the road there may be other technology changes. We know there are new regulations out there that affect both the telecommunications and the electrical side, pole attachments, data safeguarding, things like that. There's always the chance of unexpected facility degradation or maintenance needs. We're seeing great life out of our fiber, and we expect the fiber to last much longer than expected. At the same time, the biggest danger on the electronic side of the network is either manufacturers' forced obsolescence or technology changes in the marketplace that would cause us to upgrade faster than normal. Expense forecast changes, unknown. The grant funding availability, we are investigating that. I can tell you the rules are exceedingly complex on the federal grants. We're still waiting for the state grant rules to be written. We're not eligible for the FCC grants, the next round of them, which is about $20.4 billion, and so we're also trying to work on that.
Is that because we're public?
It's because we're wholesale. You have to be an eligible telecommunications carrier to be eligible for the FCC grants. And since we're wholesale as opposed to retail, we cannot be an ETC. And again, that risk of technology change, that's an ever-present risk in this environment. So overall conclusions, fiber is in good financial shape today. Implementing an annual rate plan, increasing the revenue in the range of 3% will maintain the financial metrics beyond the current five-year planning period. It improves the liquidity to cover diminishing cash. It keeps pace with inflationary costs. And again, it phases out the reliance on electric wholesale funding for shared assets. We are discussing the proposed revenue increases with the service providers. We always consider that a prudent step, and we're demonstrating to them the necessity to do that to maintain the network as self-sustaining in the future. And so our next steps for the board and staff is considering the interaction of the strategic plan and our rate expectations, what we're proposing here. Looking for an affirmation that we're on the right track. And then the staff will propose rate outreach plans to the service providers again.
Question, Mike. Looking at 3%, is that a singular 3% or 3% a year for 5 years?
That's 3% annually.
So okay.
3% every year over the next 5 years.
Okay.
In terms of impact to the customers, since we don't bill the customers directly, on a average DLL, that 3% would equate to a total increase to the service provider of about $3 over the 5 years. At the end of the 5 years, the rate would be up $3. So it's a very reasonable increase, and we do put the revenue increase on specific product sets. some are going to be adjusted for market rates. Others are going to be held flat because of market rates.
Commissioner McKenna, you had a question?
Yeah, thanks, Mike. Well, first of all, congratulations on the targets that you're reaching and being able to get to that sustainability and stronger footing, I think, is great, and I really appreciate your efforts on that. I'm also predicting that that same level of stability is occurring with our service providers, and one of the things that we've talked about in the past is creating a fee that allows leveling of opportunity for low-income families. And so that's a big deal to me. And I think it's a big deal to our community, and it's important to keep that in the back of our mind that as this becomes a way of our of life and a necessity versus just ain't it nice. You know, we've talked about this with our service providers, and I'm curious if you've heard anything more from them or if just my bringing up is a reminder that they were going to come back and talk to us and consider this. There wasn't a promise, but consideration.
Yes, they did consider it. They are moving forward. Have a commitment from Dimitri at Localtel. He is having to implement the same type of low-cost rates as a result of taking CAF II money. Mm-hmm. And so he's putting together a model for that. And the last communication I believe I sent to the board related to the fact that, that he has a plan in place. He's working through the details of it. Mm-hmm. It does turn out to be somewhat complex at the retail side mm-hmm. because he wants to give a fair rate, and yet he also is trying to prevent an erosion of problems sure. related to people seeing that rate, being attracted to it, and then getting on it and finding out it's not suitable. In other words, moving from their existing rate to that rate and then having to move back. Mm-hmm. So they are taking their time, but he and his staff are working through the issues related to that. I don't have a firm time commitment other than it will be done.
It would seem like it would also help take rate and applying for grants, and I appreciate the work, and I look forward to continuing to hear more about that.
So I will say I do agree with you on take rates. There is a percentage of the county that cannot afford the standard broadband rates as they exist today. And so once you have that low-cost package to deliver to those folks, I believe we will see an uptake in the take rate, which is good for all of us. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Okay. Mike, I just have a more of a comment than anything else, and that is that as we move forward with a potential 3% increase, if you flatline that over 5 years, it's a nickel a month. I would be concerned that maybe the providers, ISPs, see this as an opportunity to raise their rates and pin it on the back of the PUD as raising our rates. So I just want to plant that seed and have that discussion that maybe as you're talking to the ISPs that we wholesale to, we can let them know that we're watching this. The board is watching what the ISPs are doing and how much they're using this as an opportunity to fatten their own bank account.
I will carry that message.
Thank you. Commissioners, any other questions? Great. Mike, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Next up, the culmination of a lot of work. So we started on the strategic plan in December of last year, and pursuant to the conversation at the last board meeting, we're bringing forward the final strategic plan that will be followed by a resolution for adoption of that strategic plan. Justin will be walking through the changes that have been made since you saw it last.
Good morning, Commissioners. It's a pleasure to be with you this morning and talk about the strategic plan. I'm Justin Erickson, Managing Director of District Services. When I was with you last on September 16th, we reviewed final public comment that we had received as we officially did publish the draft on August 20th and solicit additional comments. As I indicated to you at that time, our comments on the draft plan were relatively light, and we have not received additional comments since September 16th. Of course, throughout this process, there's been opportunities for the public to be involved and to comment, including over 3,700 comments received as part of the countywide survey, where we had about 2,700 customer owners respond. So I'm indicating very light response on this slide, but just wanted to remind you of the response overall, which was, I think, indicative of a fair amount of engagement from the community. Based on the comments received and a review of previous comments throughout this process, there were a few minor changes that were made to the draft strategic plan, and the draft that you have in front of you is does include those changes. I will say that the changes to some of the core elements, such as the mission, vision, values, and priorities and objectives, there were no changes. And so I just wanted to be clear and upfront about that right away. However, there were some changes to other sections of the plan. So within the planned actions portion, we revised language related to our long-term rate planning relative to the energy usage charge. And so previously it indicated that that charge would be reduced. That may or may not occur since we haven't fully developed our process and thought around long-term rate planning and implementation thereof. We didn't want to include language quite so specific in the plan. And so that was eliminated just to provide a little bit more flexibility as we go through that process at the end of this year and into 2020. Also clarified some language relative to the Dryden wastewater project, indicated that financial assistance would be the remaining balance that would occur after grant funding had been applied. We believe that's around $1.5 million, but of course we don't have the final figures at hand at this time. We definitely heard the comments from our customer owners relative to fiber, so we thought it was important to include some additional language in the plan relative to that. And so there's several sentences that were added, including a section that indicated that we are actively evaluating acceleration of our fiber program and that we anticipate a decision would be presented to the board, or a recommendation would be presented to the board first quarter of 2020. So we did receive hundreds of comments over the course of this last year. I'm glad we were able to incorporate some additional language relative to fiber. He also included a note relative to energy conservation and our energy efficiency efforts. As we reflected back on comments during the countywide survey, we realized that we did receive a fair number of comments on this subject and that we could be a little bit more clear in the plan. And so that was done. Likewise, had some public comments related to our debt ratio, and some of the comments were individuals that maybe just weren't aware of how far the district has come in payment of debt, and we wanted to make it clear that our scheduled debt payments will continue, and of course we hit the 35% goal, and actually through the course of this plan and through the course of the schedule actually would be below 22% by through this 5-year window.
And if I could just amend that slightly to say under the expected value forecast.
That's right. Important.
Because there is some, the board philosophy on this, there is some flexibility around those debt payments depending on how we do financially.
Thank you. And then we did clarify some text under the financial resiliency section, which is the second strategic priority. It just felt like that could be worded a little bit differently and more effectively, and so that was completed. And then, as with any effort such as this, there are numerous ways that we just felt we could make grammatical changes or caught a few lingering typos that snuck in there, and so. Few very minor changes in the vein of that. And so with that, I thought it would be good to go through the core elements one final time. Your four strategic priorities, again, have not changed based on the latest round of feedback. So the first priority would be to invest in assets and people and seek top quality, top quartile performance. Generation, reliability, and safety. Number two, sustain excellent financial resiliency while mitigating the risk of large rate increases. Number three, enhance the quality of life in Chelan County through programs that distribute the benefits of public power. And lastly, engage in countywide growth planning and job creation efforts while ensuring that our rates and policies remain stable and predictable, kind of harkening back to the financial resiliency. Mission, vision, values have not changed. And of course, the strategic objectives and components of vision, the first four are actually very similar to the current strategic plan. Five, six, and seven did have amendment through this process, but no changes recommended in the last couple of months. So let me summarize the planned actions that are set forth in the plan. Related to long-term rate planning, it's a series of actions that would increase financial resiliency in our business lines. You just heard about fiber, so I won't go into additional detail. On water and wastewater, have a presentation on that recently as well, but just to recap, 4% annual rate increases are anticipated 2020 to 2024 for both systems. Mentioned the Dryden project already, and certainly we understand the concerns with the costs with Dryden, and we're going to continue to work through those efforts and update the board frequently. With the electric rate, 3% annual rate increases are also contemplated, and we do anticipate doing the rate design process and bringing back the formal recommendation to you in 2020. We also understand that we've got customer owners that may be challenged by any rate increases, and so we're going to concurrently evaluate our low-income rate assistance and our energy efficiency programs to help provide support for those that are particularly impacted by rate increases. And these rate increases will support stable and predictable rates over the long term, and of course protect against the risk of poor market conditions. Growth and economic development. Going to lean in more on countywide economic development matters. We know that there's a caveat to that that was indicated clearly by our customer owners that said, we want you to support family wage jobs and economic development, but please also ensure that it impacts electric rates minimally. As we go about our work in economic development, we do have a economic development liaison position that is contemplated in the 2020 budget. We're going to do some other review of our industrial rate structure and look at the hybrid renewable resource-based rate as well. As has been discussed with aesthetics, going to retain our current policy. No changes contemplated there. Through our customer owner survey, we learned that customer owners are very supportive of public power benefit and the early action opportunity. So with public power benefit, we will continue that effort through the planning horizon, provided, of course, that financial conditions are favorable. As you know, the plan does contemplate potentially reentering the capital borrowing market. And so this comment also, bullet number two, also contemplates continuing public power benefit even under that scenario, provided other thresholds are met. And we'll be going through a full solicitation process in 2020. And on early action, 82% of our customer owners supported the concept and supported the district pursuing that in light of the fact that it could help us gain support of a 50-year license. And so really look, we've already had quite a bit of interest in a couple of jurisdictions contact us seeking partnerships. And so you'll hear more about that, I think, very soon. So wrapping this up, next steps. Immediately following this presentation, you do have an adopting resolution that's there for your consideration. We will continue to integrate the strategic plan into our business plans, and you'll hear more about the business plans a little bit later this morning or this afternoon. And then there's a series of actions that are going to have major staff commitment and effort associated with them, and including in the very near term, so even late this year into 2020. And I won't go through them all there, but they're listed there, so you can see there's a number of things from fiber acceleration to the solicitation process I mentioned for PPB and early action to a whole host of other actions and activities. It's going to be a busy time. And with that, I'd like to thank a number of people that have been involved in this process. Certainly, first and foremost, the board for setting a clear direction, and your leadership has just been foundational to this effort over the last year, and really setting the tone and setting forth a compelling vision. So I know I speak for all district staff when I say that we're looking forward to implementing this plan and the vision set forth therein. Of course, we couldn't have done this plan without the concerted interest from our customer owners, and including many that chose to dedicate their time on topic teams and strategy partners. Of course, our elected and appointed officials throughout the county. And I think we had, by my count, at least 40 employees that were focused in some way on this planning effort, and not to mention, of course, all of our employees that were engaged in the survey process and as customer owners. So widespread interest and support, and I think it says a lot about the community and about the legacy of public power in Chelan County. But with that, I would be happy to answer any questions that you have.
Commissioners, any questions? You've done such a fine job that there are no questions.
It seems sort of anticlimactic at this moment in time.
It does. That's right.
I mean, it's time to go, but it's been a long road to get there. But great job of shepherding this process.
Well, I appreciate that. It's certainly been a big team effort, and so kudos to the team.
But somebody's got to dot the I's, cross the T's, and get the cattle prod out sometimes, right?
So, Justin, just one minor thought, and I ran into it this morning as I'm going through my pure safety training and trying to get caught up on that.
Oh, I haven't
heard that. When this is finally adopted and it goes out as a final document, then I think each department or everywhere in the organization that has mission and vision somewhere in our documentation has to be challenged to look at it and update it. And I think that'll be a healthy process too, that where it's integrated into everything that we're doing. So just a little challenge on that to not forget that little minor part.
That's a really good point. I think the timing of this coinciding with the five-year business planning process will certainly help provide that venue as well. But we're also going to have a fair amount of just, you know, print materials and posters and things to update as well. So
that's a big deal.
Yes.
Not along those lines, but sort of along those lines, being a data nerd, I really appreciate the demographics and in the middle of the strategic plan. I find that really valuable to get an understanding of who we are as a county.
Thank you. We appreciate that.
Of course, the first sign that needs to be changed is that one.
An assignment has already been given to change that sign and that sign. And actually the one back here.
Okay.
But thanks for the good work and great document and great work. And I appreciate the efforts by all staff.
Thank you, sir.
And to piggyback on what Mr. McKenna said, I appreciate the outreach and I appreciate the transparency and the communication with the ratepayers and the customer owners. It's so critical to have the involvement of the entire community. And we have numerous times received accolades for that outreach. And I know it represents effort, it represents work, and numerous employees have to touch it along the way. But it's worth every second and every ounce of the effort and energy that it takes to pull together. And the community has told me numerous times how much they appreciate that transparency. So thank you.
It's really good to hear. Thank you.
Yeah. So, Commissioners, we have a resolution in front of us.
I would move adoption of resolution number 6.
Do we have?
Which is adopting and authorizing the implementation of the Chelan County PUD strategic plan for 2020 to 2024.
Thank you for reading that.
Second.
Been moved and seconded. Any discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. It's unanimous.
Yes. Thank you. So now we move to the next step, implementation. With a lot of challenges there, too. Commissioners, we're going to jump over item 7 just because we have some outside visitors who are coming in. So we've informed them that we try to have that come up around 11:45 so that they wouldn't be sitting around waiting. So we'll make sure that when we get to that point that we try to jump right in at 11:45. We might even interrupt another item just to make sure that their time is used wisely. So with that, we're going to move to the Service Center and Fifth Street redevelopment update. Dan Frazier is going to present for us.
Morning, Commissioners.
Morning.
Good morning.
Dan Frazier, Director of Shared Services. I'm going to pull up our presentation here. Well, thanks for the opportunity to give you guys an update. We're a lot going on. Obviously, this is a big project, and we've been working on it for quite some time. But we've been out in the public and with some advisory groups recently. We'd like to give the commission an update on what we've been doing and where we're at and what they'll be hearing about over the next several weeks and months. So broken this into really two sections. One is the service center itself, what's going on that project around design and aesthetics, and then also the Fifth Street redevelopment project, which is something that was an integral part of the overall package of moving off of this site and what would go behind us on this site. And so what we're looking at with the advisory group we've been working with on that project. This is no action today, just really some information. So on the Service Center project itself, you're going to see some different images through here, through this presentation. And what we're really just doing is trying to give you a flavor of what's to come. This isn't a design package. We're early on. We're in what's called the schematic design effort. And schematic design is generally considered up to 30% of the design of the project. So we have a lot going on, but we've done a lot of the work in the functional areas. So obviously, first and foremost, this is a service center. This is about getting our crews and our people, our materials, their trucks, all in the right place and And we showed a lot through the project about how productivity will help really pay for this this project. And so we had to get that productivity to be realized. And to do that, we had to put the people and everything in the right place. So the functional design really has to be set in that first 30%, and then we get to detail that as we go in through 60 and 90%. And we'll do that through the next 2 weeks. We'll be finishing up the schematic design process. But then we started working on what we're calling project aesthetics. So this is obviously the front porch, the front door to the city when you come in. We wanted this to be a nice building, not opulent, but something that the people can say, you know, our money was spent wisely. It's going to last 50 years or longer, because that's what we definitely want it to be there. So we're going through that process, and we started that work with the a group of two commissioners, both Commissioner Bowles and Commissioner Congdon are on that group, along with some staff, and we did some initial work around the aesthetics of both the building, the site, and then even a little bit to the interior. And then we went to our customer advisory group last Tuesday, and both commissioners were able to attend. We really appreciate your attendance. I think it really sets the tone for the group to know that the commissioners are definitely involved and interested. So we did some visioning, which is outside of my realm of numbers and figures, and it was some great exercise with the people in the community about what makes Chelan County Chelan County, and what makes each individual area important to them and something we want to show in this facility. So we went through the process and got some great feedback, and that feedback is going to come back to the design team and start to really look at the public spaces. We're looking at the lobby, the plaza, and then the outside of the building, what that all looks like. So they'll be going through the inspiration, we called it, that was received through that process, and then we'll start to put things in place, and we'll be back to that group after we've done some work with their input later this winter. But in addition to that, we want to get out to our customers, and we're going to use Public Power Week as a great way of not having another set of meetings, but what's a point in time where we're engaging in our with our customers? And so we're going to use Public Power Week as a way to get some of these concepts out and get feedback from our customers about the open the public spaces, so the lobby, the plaza, and get some more feedback. We actually heard a lot of feedback during the outreach in February. People that were thinking, what's the next step, gave us that feedback. Make sure you do this with the building. Make sure you have a place for what do kids do when parents come in to coordinate a new service or pay their bills. And so we did get some of that feedback early on, but we're going to supplement that, get some more feedback, and bring that into this process.
Public Power this week or next week?
It's this week.
It's this week.
So right now, we are there. And so then we'll bring that, again, back to that advisory group later this winter. We know how this is going to push. We like to do things in November. December is kind of a month that it's hard to get groups together, so we'll see what we can do. If not, it'll probably be early in the year. This is what's really nice about this. This can actually lag the design a little bit because we don't get into that detail of design. But if we have things we want to change functionally, we'll need to get that input. But this can always lag a little bit to make sure we're doing it right. And so we don't make this something that's on our critical path that we just have to get out of the way. We want to make sure this has an organic nature to it. So the other effort we've been working on is this Fifth Street redevelopment. And so if you recall, this was a joint effort of the Port of Chelan County, the City of Wenatchee, and the PUD. We've been working on this for, it's been almost a year that we started working on the concept. Late last year, we selected a consultant and started moving forward. We had design workshop in June, and that resulted in a lot of feedback about what could be on the site that complements downtown. Remember when we went through the process, the concept was don't compete with downtown. What complements downtown? What's downtown missing, and how do we make our downtown more vibrant? And what would fit on this site? So we had that workshop in June, got a lot of feedback. The consultant went away and was able to put some meat around the ideas, but also did a lot of market analysis. And so the project partners got together a few weeks ago, looked at the different concepts on the site, and we decided to go with a kind of a three-scenario approach to the redevelopment. And we met with the community group again last Friday, and so we were able to talk to them about those concepts.
Before you leave that slide, I'm just curious, across the tracks, the Lineage property, mm-hmm. all of that is now going to be redeveloped also, more than likely?
Yes, it is.
And that that's all of those large buildings on both sides of them?
It is. It's something, obviously, this was out for bid a few weeks ago or a couple months ago, and I think there's interest in redevelopment. And that the idea of tying these two together definitely came up in both the June 21st workshop and again yesterday. Is there a way to tie together what happens there? Obviously, we don't know what the future is, if it's going to be privately held, publicly held, joint venture. But there's definitely a desire, because we are so close to the waterfront, but we aren't on the waterfront. So how could we tie together? There was ideas of a pedestrian bridge similar to the one at Second Street, and somehow tying the two properties together. And maybe, you know, if one has a more heavier parking or the other one have more buildings, if it was more conducive to certain types of development. So the three different scenarios, we'll call them scenario A, B, and C, but they're not in any particular order. Other than this first one is about a public and nonprofit focus. We did have a lot of local nonprofits, library, YMCA, and others, who said this would be a great place for us. We want to expand our operations, want to expand our presence in the valley, and this would give us the ability to do that in a little more downtown-focused way. And there's buildings here available that could hopefully just be repurposed and readapted. So you see the one of the things that came up is the park out there. Now, I know for us, that park means something. It's always been a little bit of a park area on our campus. But a lot of the urban planners look at that and say, that's a great, what we call, lantern spot or an iconic spot to enter the city. So maybe a building needs to go there, maybe something that really draws you into downtown. So there's some concepts around that. And moving the open spaces maybe to the middle of the campus. You can see there's a what they call the spillway steps. It's at B there in the middle on Wenatchee Avenue, where there's more of a presence of kind of like the harbor steps in Seattle, where it's entering the site. There's some nice public spaces in there, green spaces, lots of landscaping, and bringing that more into the middle of the site. This would also definitely keep the Riverside Playhouse and their activities there. And we've tried to, even this is a kind of a funny concept, that there's a facility somewhere where instead of tearing down a building to create access, they actually built a road through a building. So you actually kind of drive through a warehouse. And that was one of the concepts that came up, was maybe you can drive through Fish and Wildlife to access the site instead of tearing the building down to build a road. So that was one of the concepts out there. But it does have a residential focus. Now, one of the things that's very much proven in this market is the residential use. Residential uses right now are, they pencil out really, really well. There's developers, obviously, the Riverside 9, the 600 Riverside, recently kicked off is going to be the Kittitas Street apartments that the city is working with the developer on. So right now, this is every one of these has some kind of residential element on it, because it really is a market-driven component. The second scenario, residential focus, is just that. It really is a residential-heavy adaptive reuse plan. So there's some new buildings. Actually, almost all new buildings. The adaptive reuse of the tech shop, everybody loved that tech shop. They loved the heavy timber framing, the brick building. It said it'd be great as a restaurant, a brew pub.
Amazing.
Not a great tech shop, I'll tell you that. our highest technology facility is nearing 100 years old.
We need lots of air fresheners.
Yes, I think that's a total gut. I think you have to take that all the way down to the brickwork.
I suspected that. Yeah.
Yeah, but they just love the character of the building. It does have a lot of character to it. So that those adaptive reuse of that site was always very, very high on a lot of people's priority. This does have a new tower, residential tower there where our parking lot is, our main parking lot. And then something with this building, whether it's using part of the building, tearing down part of it. Remember, this was built in phases. There's multiple wings here. You could take down part of it. You could reuse part of it. Ground floor retail, kind of like the Riverside Drive, where you have ground floor retail, residential above. And then some kind of boutique hotel. So one of the things that happened in the waterfront redevelopment, there was a boutique hotel in the economics schedule for where the Hilton ended up building. And so there's still a demand for a boutique hotel that's showing up in the city's economics. So I showed that on this site because it is a compatible residential use. So those are like 70-room, 80-room, kind of a higher price point, but nicer hotel. And then finally is the commercial focus. This will be great to hit a home run with some commercial job creation, revitalize some downtown during the day, add people working. There's talk with the different educational organizations, whether it's Wenatchee Valley College or universities, about locating here on site. But this also is somewhat speculative. It's a little higher risk. There's some office space. And what we found out in the market is we don't really have the market to get the rents that would facilitate us building, say, a three-story office building. You really need to have an anchor tenant before that would happen. So this one is, it's great to think of what could happen on this site, but this is, you're going to have to really do some heavy marketing to get this scenario to occur. But what's great about these three scenarios is, as we plan these three scenarios, you can find out what the pros and cons of each of them are. And when this thing ends up redeveloping, you know it won't be any one of them. It'll be a piece of all three of them. So we do see that there's a great commercial use on this site. We see there's some great residential use. There's some great public-private, maybe partnership uses. And when you do these, really you're identifying what the roadblocks would be, what the barriers would be, what you have to do to overcome them. And so when someone comes and says, hey, I really want to do a residential, you know how that fits. You know what the barriers are. You know what you have to do to get that to kick off. So all of these plans have a real strong pro, and they each have some kind of barrier that's going to take to get over to the next phase. But by doing all three and studying all three, we can really look at and see what those are.
I'm curious how the discussion went with the barriers on the residential being right next to the railroad.
That's actually, so the senior living, that was actually a comment I had. just moved my mother-in-law into a senior living, and I think they like it a little quieter than banging railroad cars. There would need to be some major sound attenuation for the senior facility back there. So, but the ones along the frontage really make a lot of sense, and then the adaptive reuse of the other building. So that's one component that probably had a pretty good barrier to it.
Dan, the parking spaces that you have on your schematic, mm-hmm. are they fairly representative of what the city would require for usage?
No, this site, it depends on the use. So it relies on shared parking. So shared parking means if I have commercial use, you're going to use it during the day, residential use will use it at night. And so that's where the blend of uses actually helps, because you can do shared parking. If you did residential heavy, we show parking underneath the building, you'd probably end up with some other structured parking or maybe even some off-site parking. But if you notice, all of them show angle parking on Wenatchee Avenue as a substantial increase in Wenatchee Avenue parking. And the one drawback the one barrier for us to do that as, or the city to do that on both sides of the street, are the fact that you've got a lot of driveways that enter this section of Wenatchee Avenue. And so you need a left turn lane, or you need two lanes so you can get people on and off the avenue. But if the other side of the street were to redevelop in a way that there's only one or two entrances, you could actually get angle parking on both sides, drastically increasing the on-street parking for those. Yeah, but parking is a limiting factor on this site.
Thank you.
So our next steps on this is we're going to continue to refine with the input that we got from the group on Friday. And it was a really good meeting. We had lots of sharing, lots of ideas, lots of support for any one of all of the scenarios had some level of support. We're going to work with the general public, do some open house and social media work. But really, we need to come back to the three boards that funded this, obviously the PUD board and the city and the Port Commission, and talk about how do we move forward from this. Once we have a kind of a bones of a plan in place, how do we move forward and bring this out to the public? And what do we actually do in terms of implementing redevelopment? We do have three more years that we're on the site here, so it's, if someone came to us tomorrow, we couldn't accommodate them. But what's the long-term plan to do that? And so we'll get that timeline in place and then work on some next steps. So happy to answer any questions.
Commissioners, any questions, comments? Yes, Commissioner Congdon.
So I probably should know this, Dan. So how did we share the funding on just this plan to get to this point? Is it a shared?
Yeah, one-third city, one-third PUD, one-third port.
And going forward, how does that look?
That's really up to, it's kind of depends on what the recommendations are. We really see a strong relationship with the port, especially because they do hold the option on this property. So we could see the city in some way partnering, but definitely partnering with the port and looking at, the port has an economic development charter that we don't have.
Mm-hmm.
And so leveraging that is probably a smart thing for us to do.
Good, good. Glad to hear that.
Good. Commissioners, any other comments? Dan, good job.
All right,
thank you.
Really good job. I'd just like to close out one action item from the board workshop, and that was the question of the allocation of cost. Dan, would you go back to that first picture, please?
All the way up?
Yeah, the very first introduction page. Oh. So just for the board's awareness, and I think there's an email on this as well, did check with Dan, and the recollection was correct that roughly 70% of the costs of the project are in the back, and only about 30% of the costs in the building. I think people tend to focus more on the building, and that's one of the reasons why we've chosen to use this picture for introducing the project, because we want to make sure that folks are clear that there's the service center is actually the majority of the costs of this project.
I'm surprised by that. So what's the cost per square foot for the main office building?
I don't want to quote off the top of my head. I know during the that was weird. During the pre-design, we were using around $350 a square foot. And I think it's a little different from that now. But
and then the service building somewhat less.
Well, it depends. So the fleet building pretty expensive per square foot because of all the amenities, all the equipment, and everything inside. Where there's a lot of canopy storage there. If you see where cars are peeking out there, that's definitely quite a bit cheaper per square foot. But a lot of it has to do with, if we move the service center, there's actually about a quarter of that office building that's dedicated to supporting the service center. So if we had just moved the service center out there, and we talked about the split campus, and so that's the easiest way to compare the cost. About a quarter of that that administration building would have to be built in order to support those things. So it's not just what's behind, it's also a portion of that.
And just one more comment. I really appreciate the fact that, you know, optics are so important, or language, the words that we use are so important, that we're calling that the main office building.
Absolutely.
I never liked the headquarters terminology. I know the whole thing is the service center, which is great, and then the main office building. Where'd that come from?
We wanted to differentiate the buildings themselves. So we've been calling it the administration building or the office building. Mm. And we use building A, B, C. We're very creative. but A in administration works well. So that's kind of the way the naming just came up.
Yeah, nice job.
All right, thank you,
commissioners. I'm going to call another audible here for a moment. It appears that we have everybody here for item 7, the supported employment program update. So I'd like to move to that item next, if that's okay.
Yeah,
and invite Ruth Erwart and Sharon Turcotte to come on up and describe the program.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm Sharon Turcotte. I'm from Office Services.
And I'm Ruth Erwart. I'm the Recruiting and EEO Program Manager.
We wanted to share just a brief update with you guys regarding the district's PUD pilot program for individuals with cognitive disabilities. The initial goal of this program was to provide experience and employment opportunities for individuals in our community.
So the 18-month pilot program is shared between two individuals. This is Sydney Lackey. She is our first employee working with us for 9 months.
Hi, Sydney.
Hi, Sydney.
Welcome.
Sydney is 6 months into her 9 months program, so her employment ends in December. In December, we have a new employee, Katie Jaspers, who joins us for 9 months. We have had the pleasure of working with Sydney, as have many of our employees. Sharon and I worked with our students from our communications department this summer, and they built a short video about Sydney's journey thus far. We'd love to show that to you, and then we'd be happy to answer any questions that you have afterwards. Someone get the lights. Thank you.
Sydney Lackey works at Chelan PUD in a supported employment position. This pilot program was developed to provide opportunities for people with disabilities.
I think the pilot program is amazing. It's been such a cool opportunity for myself and for Sydney. I think she's able to work in a lot of different environments, different departments, learn how to do different things, learn what she doesn't like, learn what she does like. For myself, I've loved working with her every single morning. I've learned how to work with different kinds of people, and I think that'll be really advantageous for myself and for the PUD in the future.
The pilot is part of the district's Public Power Benefit Program. The 18-month pilot program is shared between two employees, with Sydney being the first employee. Sydney brings value to Chelan PUD by freeing up time for her employees to focus on more complex job duties while giving her the opportunity to learn valuable on-the-job experience. There are limited career prospects for people with disabilities. This pilot program provides a unique opportunity for people with disabilities to build their resume and prepare for other employment opportunities.
Sydney has a great personality. She's always happy. She's fun to be around. She has the "I can do this" attitude. I think Sydney is a great resource who has the ability to inspire others with disabilities and those looking for opportunities to get into the mainstream workforce.
It's a journey, and there's been a lot of learning along the way. Our PUD employees are excited about the program and Sydney's work. This is about empowering individuals to understand competitive employment and giving them the resources they need to succeed.
I love with PUD because they're amazing and talented they are and just work so hard. It's a dream to work here.
This has been an incredible experience, and our employees have sent us so much feedback, how they love working with Sydney, and it just boosts the morale. Everyone loves it. It's just such a gift to have you working here. Is there any questions?
This is very moving to watch the video. Nice job, by the way. I didn't know you were an actress, huh? Good work. And we enjoy having you here. So thank you for being here and working with us here at the PUD.
I'm happy. So I'm going to start.
It's a beautiful, beautiful thing. And
so I'm sorry, Sydney. I don't know what's wrong with me. So thank you for coming. And you did do a great job of acting on there. So I've been blessed to have some very special people in my life. And so I understand the value they bring to a family, to an organization, to a community, and I'm so grateful that we have, I guess, evolved to the point where we understand what, you know, how important it is to have you here and what value it brings to us. And so I just want to say thank you, and I want to thank Steve Wright. I remember at one time Steve said he runs this PUD and he runs it very well, and he said, we can't really make a business case for this, but he found a way. And, you know, when you do the right thing, it pays off in so many ways. So thank you. Thank you to all of you.
Sydney, did you want to say anything?
Sure.
If you want to.
Thank you for hiring me for this position. This program has been a great opportunity for me to step out of my comfort zone and join the adult workforce. Everyone has been caring and helpful as I learn each new task. I look forward to finishing out my part in the internship, and with my new skill set, I find a great job.
Oh my goodness, Sydney, thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
It's a little scary to come and talk here, isn't it? Everybody tells us that.
You've done a great job in a scary situation. Right?
You did a really nice job.
Yeah.
I'd like to say to my colleague, Ann Congdon, who just said, I don't know what's wrong with me. I think Ann I'd like to say what's right with you. All of us who sit here as commissioners come from some format of a privileged life. And your care and concern for others who don't share our similar background has been an eminent force in providing this opportunity. Without you and your persistence, we wouldn't be here. And it makes me extremely proud, Sydney, of you, and Anne, of you, and the connection it makes to Chelan County PUD. And I think these are the things that make us a great organization. And thanks to all of you. And Sydney, thank you. And Anne, thank you. There's nothing wrong with you.
Well, there is.
Oh, no. You know what, Anne, we love you just as you are. Okay? Thank you.
Thank you. Maria, her mom, rushed here, so we thank her for Maria, I didn't know if you had any comments.
Could you please step to the microphone? These are recorded. Sorry.
Fully intended on being in something totally different.
There's a handheld there if that is easier for you.
Okay, let me step out of here. Is it on?
Is it on?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, well, I just wanted to say thank you, everyone, for this amazing opportunity.
Try not to cry too. But to be honest with you, through this, you've opened my own eyes to my daughter's abilities. And it's not an easy thing to do to be a mom and wonder how they're going to do. And she's proved she's amazing. And I just thank you for giving her that opportunity to prove that she's pretty amazing. So, thank you.
Very good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Nice job, Mom.
Yeah. Very nice job, yep.
It's a great definition of teen this morning.
Sharon. All right, so obviously thank you to that team for the incredible job that they've done, and we certainly are looking at extending the program. So we'll be back to you with some more information about that.
Can I just say one thing?
Yeah.
I haven't been able to see her on a day-to-day basis, but I was here 6 months ago on her first day, and to look at the transformation of that young girl 6 months ago today, it's impressive. Good job, staff. That was impressive.
Okay, I think it's going to be hard to make a transition back to the regular agenda here. But we're going to do the best we can, and hopefully John Sagerser can help us with that as he talks about the Rock Island Powerhouse 2 cranes update.
It's an emotional topic.
That's a hard act to follow. Get your Kleenexes.
All right. Well, thanks for having me. So I'm here this morning to present a draft resolution. It is a draft, so this is for information only. No action required today. We'll be returning at the next board meeting on October 21st. Requesting action at that point in time. So the resolution will request award of bid 1881 to Real COH Incorporated of Canada for refurbishment of the Rock Island Powerhouse 2 gantry crane and the procurement of two new Powerhouse 2 bridge cranes. The resolution also requests a capital budget increase of approximately $11.8 million for the various associated projects with the three cranes. Some background on the cranes for you. The gantry crane, and we have one gantry crane and one powerhouse bridge crane currently. They are both original equipment installed back in the mid-70s. Both are required for unit rehabilitation. So it takes both cranes working in tandem in order to take a generator out of the water passage. The controls for the bridge crane, the main 250-ton hook, do not work. So we could not use it as it is for unit rehabilitation. And the auxiliary hook, which is a smaller tonnage, about 75 tons, those controls are at the end of their life and are no longer supported. It is important to note that the bridge crane is one of our major tools for overhauls as well. So if we want to continue on with our existing overhaul maintenance programs, we would need to be able to refurbish that auxiliary hook to make sure that it's viable as well. The refurbishment of both cranes are included as part of our Powerhouse 2 rehabilitation program. So this is refurbishing the crane was planned work. We received two bids, one from Whiting Company, one from Real COH. Both bids were compliant and both within the engineer's estimate. Bid options included refurbishment of our existing cranes, procurement of new cranes, as well as an option to add an additional new bridge crane. So after review, we're recommending award of Schedule B, a new bridge crane, Schedule C, a second new bridge crane, Schedule D, rehabilitation of the existing gantry crane, and Schedule F, which is actually a deduct if we bought two new bridge cranes. The reasoning behind these are mainly financial. As you can see, between rehabilitation of the bridge crane and the cost for the rehabilitation and the new, there's very little difference between them. And in fact, in the case of Real COH, it's actually less expensive to get a new bridge crane. And just the opposite on the gantry crane. There is quite a big price difference between a new gantry crane and the cost of a rehabilitated gantry crane. So that's why we're recommending rehabilitating the gantry crane. And then, of course, with the large deduct, that COH puts them at the lowest cost option for the selected schedules. So for the budget revision, we currently have a project for the new, for a 250-ton bridge crane. For our existing budget, we had $4.9 million budgeted. With the bids received, we expect that to go up $2.8 million, $2.9 million for a new revised capital budget for the bridge crane of $7.8 million. For the gantry crane, we currently have a budget of $5.7 million. We expect that to go up $3.3 million to a revised budget of $9.1 million. And then the resolution as currently drafted would include a third project for the second new bridge crane, and that would add $5.6 million. There is still some internal debate on whether we'd want to have a third project for this new bridge crane or whether we'd just add the budget to the existing project on the bridge crane. So that may change in the final resolution when you see it. So the budget revision not only includes the actual bids from the bids received from 1881, but also includes a lot of the lessons learned that we got from the bridge and gantry crane work that we did at Rocky Reach. So you should have a resolution on your consent agenda to close out the bridge crane work at Rocky Reach, and we're incorporating a lot of those lessons learned here. One of those lessons learned, as you can see here, we had about 25% increase from the time we awarded the bridge crane work at Rocky Reach to what the final contract closeout costs were for that. So those are, I think we call them known unknowns in one case. was we get into refurbishing these based on experience. We know we're going to run into cracked drums. We know we're going to run into things that we're not able to see at this point in time. And our experience shows us that that's about a 25% increase. So as we look at the gantry crane in particular, we're recommending a 20% increase based on those unknowns from our experience, incorporating those lessons learned from Rocky Reach. Also incorporating some of the lessons learned from Rocky Reach, we saw an increase in district time, consulting engineers, and inspection labor costs to make sure that our refurbishments came out the way we wanted them to. And a lot of it had to do with the on-site work, making sure that it was tuned correctly, that it was functioning as needed be, especially as we get into some of the larger picks. One of the things that we were not anticipating, we based our original budget off of the bid prices from Rocky Reach that were approximately 4 years ago in 2015. And as you can see here, the bids today are almost double in price. So we anticipated some escalation, time value of money, things along those lines, an increase in metal prices due to tariffs and other things like that. But we were not prepared for an almost a double cost for that. On the bridge crane, we saw some of the similar cost increases, a little bit less because it's new, so there's less unknowns, which is one of the reasons why we're proposing only a 10% to cover some of those unknowns, similar to what we experienced at Rocky Reach, because we don't expect as many. And from a bid side, we saw about a 50% increase rather than a complete doubling of the price. We are recommending to add a new bridge crane. Rock Island Powerhouse 2 is one of the only powerhouses that we have that currently does not have two bridge cranes. Chelan also only has one bridge crane, but again, it only has two units, not eight. Some of the reasons and some of the increased benefits, we expect to see an increase in resiliency, so our ability to respond to forced outages, our ability to maintain the existing units as we engage in a rehabilitation program. We've engaged quite a bit with our finalists, the turbine generator manufacturers, and they've all indicated through our design build process that if we expect to maintain a predictable schedule with our rehabilitation program, that a dedicated bridge crane would be necessary for them to ensure any sort of predictable schedule with that. So we do expect kind of a reduced risk of the rehab schedule. Based on these, with kind of an estimated $7 million budget, which includes the cost of the bridge crane plus an additional $1.4 million for district labor expenses, consulting engineers, things like that, we see a favorable economic evaluation for the crane as well. So our next steps, obviously, we'll be back in 2 weeks requesting approval of the resolution. Upon approval, we'll award as soon as possible, as this is one of many items that is threatening the start date of our planned rehabilitation of Powerhouse 2. We are currently planning to start that, the first unit overhaul, in September of 2021. And the current schedule as bid for the gantry cranes has it completed in December, which could impact it. But as I said, there are many, many items that need to fall into place for us to start in September, and this is just one of them. With that, I'll
Commissioners, open up any
questions.
Any questions? Yes, Commissioner Condon.
So, John, can you wait 2 weeks? Do you need us to consider this today, this afternoon?
That is totally your call. it's a lot of money, and so we wanted to give you time to think about it. In the grand scheme of things, 2 weeks probably not going to make that big of a difference.
I look to Randy, because I know Randy. Commissioner Smith,
time guy.
You are the soak time guy.
Yeah,
I think it's good to have it out there for a couple of weeks. I just think it's a good protocol for us.
Okay.
It's okay. We'll be okay.
Any other questions? John, I have one. I'm recalling the crane that we replaced at Rocky Reach, and one of the problems with that crane was the construction of the crane, that it was, if I'm not mistaken, it was it had some kind of rivets in the crane as opposed to more modern welding construction.
Mm-hmm.
So the crane that we're talking about refurbishing, what is its construction?
It's welded construction.
It's welded.
So the gantry crane frame is a welded steel construction.
Okay.
So it's in good shape. So we're going to replace the trolley, which is the piece up on top that moves around. So we'll take it off completely. We'll use a mobile crane, take it off completely, bring it to the ground, and put a new one right on top. There will be inspections. That's part of the 20% for the known unknowns. Is because there are some, we've got to do some weld inspections, so there may be some weld repairs, replacement of wheels, trucks, bearings, electrical feeds, some of those types of things associated with the main structure.
Great. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
John, I've been trying to figure out how to ask the question, so you know, forgive me if I kind of ramble here a little bit, but what is the... when you use to replace the cranes and to follow this proposal, when we go to do our largest pick, what is the percentage of capacity utilized in that pick?
So the largest pick that we will do will be the generator. So we'll pull the generator and or the stator and the rotor combined. They actually lock them into place together. They tandem the one of the bridge cranes and the outside gantry crane, and that allows them to get the hooks close enough together to be able to pick it up. And that is going to be, well, the capacity is 500 tons, and it's going to be pretty close to that. I don't know the exact weight.
So to have new and improved equipment really improves the safety.
Absolutely.
For our crews that are working on it. And I guess I'd like to speak to the support of that in terms of making it the safest environment we can for our crews to do the work that's necessary to continue to produce our product.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, one of the things I forgot to mention, since you mentioned safety, is that is one of the benefits of a second bridge crane, because it allows us to do more work without removing the roofs off of the powerhouse. So at Powerhouse 2, in order to remove the generator, we have to take the roof sections off, which exposes us to weather, you know, wet surfaces, slippery surface, ice, things along those lines. We will need to do that to remove the generator, but then once that's done, we can close up the roofs and then have two bridge cranes that can be worked in tandem for other larger loads, something greater than 250 tons.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Commissioners, any other comments for John? Oh, great.
Good. All right.
Nice presentation. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's just interesting. I've never heard so much sniffling from the board and from the audience over a crane presentation. It was a really emotional presentation. So I think if you ever want anything passed, just do that previous and then bring in the next one, and it's like, sure, it's automatic, man.
Which is what I'd like to do is item 10 is the five-year business plans, and this is about probably 75 minutes worth of presentation, but I think we can split it up and do the first piece, which take about 15 minutes, and then we may even try to fit in a couple of manager items, depending on how many questions you have, just to use the time wisely up until about noon. And then we'll come back to it this afternoon and finish up after that. That's okay with you. I'm going to invite Mark Mullins to come up, although I'll be making this first presentation. Mark has been in charge of putting a lot of this work together, so he's going to help me along the way if I make any errors. I'm going to go through this first section fairly quickly. Who's going to control? Maybe. Okay, there we go. Mark's going to control up there. All right, so things we'll cover today: mission, vision, values, and objectives, the overview of the district-wide plans for 2020-24. I want to spend just a minute on technology roadmaps because this is one of the new pieces of this plan. It really plays off of the board's direction to focus more on innovation coming out of the board workshop last year. Known unknowns, as we've done in the past, and then we will switch to each individual business unit talking about its five-year plans. Mission, vision, challenges, you've already seen once today. I'm not going to speak to that. The values as well, you have seen before today. I will just comment to say that on the balanced scorecard, there are three changes here. These, again, reflect the changes that the board suggested, directed at the board workshop last year to, first of all, get resiliency, make that a bigger focus for the organization. You see that underneath the internal section where we've modified operational excellence to, with specific focus on efficiency, effectiveness, compliance, risk assessment, and resiliency. In addition, you see under the two focuses, under foci, under enablers, that advancing human and organizational performance is now very much a focus, and encouraging innovation is now a specific focus area. So these are the seven areas that every one of our performance plans we will make sure that we address, and you will see our action items falling under these seven different categories. The liquidity graph has not been updated since last year. That should not be a significant challenge, you'll see in a moment, because there is not a significant change in net revenues for the district in this plan. We do have some increases in revenues, some increases in expenses. They tend to offset each other, and so we're still looking at a very similar picture to the one that we showed at the beginning of strategic planning, where we would begin to have liquidity challenges in that 2022 period, which would put us in the mode of beginning to borrow at that point. If we have low revenues, that borrowing would start earlier and around the 2021 period. Now, I will caveat that to say we are considering both some refinancing options. We'll be talking to the board about that over the course of the next couple months, as well as looking at some questions about whether we should be financing portions of the service center, just because it may be there are more options there for using tax-exempt debt than we would have with investments in particular with respect to our hydro projects. The strategic plan goals Justin went over earlier today, so I will not be repeating those here. Just to say that some of the key learnings from this planning cycle are that we have focused on the investing in assets to bring that down to particular trying to improve hydro system capability, distribution system reliability, and safety, along with and where we want to get into first quartile, along with aiming to improve our customer service technology, and that comes out of our desire to move forward with automated metering infrastructure and the platform that that creates for us to do a lot of new things with respect to customer service technology. And certainly technology and better access to data are going to be a central role in the course of the next 5 years. The energy markets continue to evolve and remain uncertain. I would say that Greg and I would both, I believe, say today that we are more optimistic about the path for power markets than we were a year ago. And the prices are up a little bit. It's the first time in a few years that we've seen prices go up. But we also are quite humble about our ability to forecast future market prices and know that, that in fact, they can go in either direction. We probably are more concerned today about retail load shifts moving from wholesale to retail than we have been in the past. And, in fact, that's part of the strategic plan, is to look for options there. And at least at this point, we do not forecast that we would see a big shift that would cause us to have a lot of new load coming in at our currently very low rate. We would hope to be able to direct that load into something like the high-density load rate that we've been able to use for the Diamond Foundry. If that were to be different from that, then that would be a significant rate exposure for us. With the assumptions that are in this plan. We meet all of our five-year financial metrics. So we have now gone through and added in the changes. And I probably should have started with this to say this has been a more efficient process this time around than the last time around because of the way we ran it, by having the board guidance early with respect to mission, vision, values, and being able to translate that into balanced scorecard. We have been able to work in parallel rather than sequence with the development of the five-year plans. So we have captured many of the thoughts about what's in the new five-year plan as adopted by you today into these five-year business plans, not all, but most of them. And with that, we still feel like we're able to meet the five-year financial metrics. I will say that while we've captured most of those thoughts, we have not captured all of them. In particular, we held out on making any assumptions about rates until the board had adopted the strategic plan. So there are no assumptions with respect to revenue enhancements as a result of rates that are embedded in the numbers that you would see here. As we've done in the past, we want to review for you how this plan financially compares against what was adopted at the time of the strategic plan, the last round of strategic planning. This will be the last comparison that you see against the 2015 strategic plan. Again, our revenues are down substantially compared against that plan. You can see that as a result of the change in the market prices at the bottom of the page there, the dramatic decrease in market prices, both in heavy and light load, both about a $17 decrease in heavy and about a $15 decrease in light for that 2019 to 2024 period, results in less wholesale revenue. Our service revenues are up, so that's primarily as a result of the Diamond Foundry. We did not have a category of off-system end-use loads in the last strategic plan. We didn't know we were going to have a Microsoft sale in the last plan. So you do see a movement of dollars here from wholesale revenues into the off-system end-use sale that is occurring as a result of that sale to Microsoft. Our cost-plus long-term contract revenues are up, both as a result of the fact that our costs are up, and because they are cost-based contracts, those result in more revenues, but also the specific revenues that have come in as a result of the Alcoa contract. Our operating expenses are up. Our capital expenditures are up, both of those as anticipated. That's the investing in assets part of the strategic plan being implemented. Our liquidity has changed only a very small amount as a result of all of those changes that have taken place. Our debt outstanding is higher because, again, we were going to generate more revenue and we were going to use more of that to reduce debt. Even with that, you will see that our expected value forecast is that we get to a below 22% debt-to-equity ratio during the course of this five-year period. I will note that we do tend to be a bit, or we have in the past at least, tended to be a bit pessimistic about our forecast. Despite the decline in revenues, we actually ended up $83 million better from the period 2015 to 2019 than the strategic plan forecast. So we've had some very good years here, even compared against the what turned out to be somewhat optimistic revenue forecasts included in the last strategic plan. Now, let's talk about what's different compared against last year. I mentioned earlier there's a very small difference in terms of the bottom line relative to where we were last year, about an $8 million difference. I'll simply say that if you combine a whole bunch of those lines, revenue, we expect to have some revenue increases, and they are offset by some expense increases. And that's what gets us to about the $8 million level. Our capital expenditures are about the same across this period as what we forecast last year. Liquidity about the same. Debt outstanding roughly about the same. We do have that relatively, like I say, first time we've seen this in the last 4 or 5 years, a increase in the market price compared against what we were forecasting last year. And that actually is down from earlier this summer. We did not see big price excursions this summer as we did the prior year. And as a result, the current market price is a little bit lower now than it was just a few months ago, but still higher than it was last year. Key drivers for us, the things that are a big focus for us as we're putting this budget together: maintaining strong and resilient district financials was number one, making sure that we are in good, maintain the good financial health of the organization, getting to an 89% hydro capability number has been a very big focus for us. And, of course, we've been challenged by all of the things that are going on at the projects, all the things that we uncover as we continue to work through understanding the state of our assets. Significant change for us this year is the focus on distribution system reliability, and that does drive a lot of the expense increases that we've got. The focus on human performance initiative and driving that through the culture is a significant driver. Trying to think through this economic growth. How do we support economic growth without having significant increases in costs? We assume that we will continue the public power benefit program throughout the 5 years of the program, that we will have the financial wherewithal to be able to do that, that be consistent with the plan. And again, you'll see much more focus on innovation, and the technology roadmaps are the key to that. Technology roadmaps, we're going to introduce this concept today. We'll be doing a lot more on it over the course of the next couple of months. The goal here is to create 5-year technology roadmaps for all of the key areas in which we expect to see technology innovation throughout the district across this planning period. The goal here is to maintain focus on a highly available, resilient, and cybersecure IT infrastructure. The areas in which we are currently developing roadmaps, we have drafts on all of them now. We have an outside consultant that's been looking at those, and we're doing some of the hard work in terms of thinking through, well, how does our technology roadmap in one area have impact another area? So we're trying to pull them all together so that they are connected. Probably the one that drives a lot of things here is advanced metering infrastructure. And the connection that that has to the new customer information system that we expect to bring online next year. That creates the platform for doing lots of different things. Along with that, we have been given a lot of thought to advanced distribution management systems, which is substations, feeders, digitalization of all of that data, being able to better understand and connect not just the information that we'll get from the meter reads at the home, but also the reads along the way. Be able to understand how power flows throughout the system and be able to improve the reliability of the system as a result of that information. A big aha moment for us this summer was, as we worked through all of these different technology roadmaps, was understanding just how important our GIS system, the Geographic Information System, is as a platform for everything else, and that our GIS system needs to be updated, over the course of the next couple of years, and that without that change in that system, we are going to stall out on a lot of our other efforts. And the importance and the priority that we're going to have to put on the GIS system in order to be able to succeed at everything else. And just by way of example, if you have AMI and you now have all of this data and you have the ability to be able to provide more outage management information to customers, you're going to have to pair that with a GIS system in order to be able to really make it work. Now, that turns out to be true for a lot of our systems. Mobility. Mobility programs is the greater capability for our folks to be able to do work in the field, so they're not having to come back to read maps and schedules and be able to see information in the field on their iPads, but also as they're making changes to the system to be able to incorporate that in the field rather than coming back and inputting into a system that's back here in the headquarters. Business intelligence and data analytics is we are going to have a lot more data on this system, and now it's the ability to be able to translate that data into something that's usable for management to be able to make decisions. And we've tied that particularly to the generation and transmission digital transformation. Probably the biggest component of that you know is HRI. Being able to take the data for our hydro system and be able to pull it together in a way that we can understand it, but then share it with others as well so that we're able to get the advantage of large data sets across the hydro industry. And then there's a foundational piece of this, which is all of our information technology systems support everything else. So a lot of these systems are relying on Maximo as a way to be able to track work and understand it. So if you're able to, for example, you have a mobility program, you're able to understand what's happening in the field, you're able to input that into Maximo, then you get better data back in terms of what the impacts are for all the other work that follows on that piece of work that's just being finished. So connecting up all those pieces requires a very strong foundational system and information technology. We're going to show you one example. Now, I know this is way too small a print to be able to get much out of it, so I want you just to focus on the big picture for a moment to get a sense of these are the model for how we'll be bringing information technology roadmaps to you over the course of the next few months. What we're really trying to do here is show you this is just the overarching information technology focus. What you'd see down the left-hand side are the different elements that I just described to you, the 6 to 7 different elements associated with different technology roadmaps that we'll ultimately be producing. The expected cost for each one of those elements in places where we understand the cost, and we don't understand the cost everywhere yet. And candidly, we will struggle some with cost because we're still at an early stage. We're just trying to get a sense of the ballpark they're in with cost. The middle part of this are the specific milestones that have to be accomplished in order to be successful at that particular element. So what things need to happen in order to be able to get there and give you a sense of when things will happen in time. So when does an outage management system, for example, become available to customers? And the right-hand side, by the way, the most of that is pretty common with respect to technology roadmaps. We've looked to others who have done them, so this is not something that we created. The right-hand side is a bit new, and that's a focus on what's the benefit to the customer. So as a customer-driven organization, we wanted to be able to say, okay, so we're doing all this stuff, and sometimes it can sound like technological gobbledygook to customers. What is it that the customer is going to see out of this that creates a benefit for them? So each one of our roadmaps will be in this format where you'll be able to understand what the project is, what the schedule is, kind of how much it's likely to cost, and what is it going to do for our customers. Okay, moving on to, I mentioned earlier that we meet all of our financial metrics under the proposed 5-year business plans. The two challenging areas are liquidity and days cash on hand. Those are both ones that can be resolved with moving into the borrowing arena in the 2022 timeframe. Under board resolution, recall that anytime we move within 10% of not hitting a metric, we have to have a plan of some kind. We have talked about this before. We have a plan, and that plan is to move into the borrowing arena in that 2022 timeframe.
Steve, before we go on, looking at the technology roadmaps, mm-hmm. I'm not seeing storage and retrieval.
So you're talking about for generation or for data?
For data.
For data. How about if we take that as an assignment to okay. make sure that we've got that covered when we come back okay. with you?
Thank you. Well, that was just around the corner. I'm trying to figure out a way to work it in, but we'll get there.
I know you're rushing to get through this, but I just that roadmap is really easy to understand. I like that. Mm-hmm. Particularly as we, as a board, look at innovation, it gives a bigger umbrella picture as to everything that's being worked on and when and how much and benefit, and that makes a lot of sense to me, so I just want to let you know that.
Yeah, and to be candid, what we're finding and what the consultant said to us is your general manager is a little optimistic in terms of trying to do all these things at once. And so this is what the advantage of going through this. It gives us the opportunity to look at how the different pieces line up, where the resources are to be able to support all those different things that we're trying to do, and then be able to better schedule.
And you could hide some Reese's in there, too. That'd be all right.
Known unknowns. I'm just going to hit on the ones that are new from last year. Those are in bold. The changing system load growth, customer profiles, and large loads continues to be more significant concern today than it has been in the past. Technology and cybersecurity needs are changing pretty rapidly. They do change the outlook. And certainly are changing our expense profile as well. We are now implementing independent dam operations. So we know that there will not be a centralized mid-sea coordination. And so we're moving forward with that and expect to actually be in a position to implement that even later this year. And we're seeing some pretty significant changes in the insurance markets as a result of the things that are going on in California, the wildfire risk and the exposure that we have on premium uncertainty. You saw some of that this year. We're concerned about where that's headed for the future. So with that, actually, I am done with my introductory section. What we will be doing this afternoon is, as we have done in the past, moving to the individual business units, talking through the elements of their five-year business plans and giving you an opportunity to understand that.
Well, welcome back, and welcome to the October 7th business session of the Chelan County PUD Commission meeting. I'd like to remind everyone that we, anyone with an electronic device that might make noise or squawk during the meeting, if you'd be kind enough to please turn the volume down. We place great value on the public's input, and those that might like to address the commission, please step forward, use the microphone, and state your name, your address, and please limit your comments to 3 minutes. So, commissioners, we have a consent agenda in front of us. Is there a motion to accept the consent agenda?
I move. Go ahead. I move that we accept the consent agenda as amended.
Is there a second?
I'll second the motion.
It's been moved and seconded. Any discussions? Hearing no discussion, all those in favor say aye.
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 Those against, nay, and the ayes have it. So, Steve, would you like to present the regular agenda?
Would. So we'll move into item 15, a resolution authorizing amendment number 8 to service agreement SA-TA number 15-151 with TCF Architecture, PLLC, to provide long-term strategic facilities plan. David Lodge will be presenting for us.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. David Lodge, Project Manager. As Steve mentioned, I'm here to present a resolution to increase the not-to-exceed contract with TCF Architecture. TCF has been our partner through our long-term facility planning process for Rock Island, Rocky Beach, and the Service Center project. In February, the board authorized the current not-to-exceed amount of $11,188,000, which included the Rock Island and Rocky Beach project facility projects through completion and the Service Center project through schematic design. We were still out in the public doing outreach. In April 15th, after extensive analysis and public outreach, board approved the Service Center project and its capital budget of $134,927,000. Included in that budget was anticipated design services. That project approval initiated the schematic design process, which we are now in and nearing completion. So this proposed resolution allocates the budget for design services by increasing TCF's not-to-exceed contract amount by $9.5 million, putting the total not-to-exceed budget at $20,688,000. Again, that includes all of Rock Island, Rocky Beach, and Service Center facility design services. So this allows us to continue the Service Center project by issuing a task authorization for design development, construction documents, and services during construction as envisioned by the project plan. TCF's team includes 14 sub-consultants of various disciplines, including civil, structural, mechanical, electrical. So they're a very large team. Our experience with TCF thus far in the project is they have a deep understanding of our organization. They provide high-quality deliverables, and they are our best partner for the success of the project. In closing, our recommendation is to continue working with TCF Architecture by authorizing the proposed resolution.
Commissioners, any questions?
Yes.
Commissioner Condon.
Clarifying one for David. So this does not exceed the total overall budget.
That's correct. So this is envisioned within the project budget, and so it's allocating it to the service agreement with TCF so we can authorize work, design services.
So that's just kind of a standard procedure. It's yep. Standard kind of to GCCM?
Well, it's actually unrelated to GCCM. It's just to do architectural and engineering services with our design firm. We have to put it into their contract, their service agreement.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Commissioners, any other questions for David? No? Great. Thank you.
Next up is item 16, a resolution authorizing the general manager to execute a field work order change order with Lighted Construction Incorporated of Spokane Valley, Washington for adding C-19 building site work to the General Contractor Construction Manager Services for the Rock Island Hydroelectric Support Facility Improvement Projects. Recall we've had a number of discussions about this, including as recent as late summer.
All right. Good morning. Casey Hall, Project Manager for the Rocky Reach Facilities Program.
Sam Dilley, Project Manager for the Rock Island Facilities Program.
So we're here today, as Steve indicated, to provide a brief update. Well, also provide a brief update on the Rocky Reach and the Rock Island Facilities projects, along with presenting two resolutions. These resolutions are needed, one for each project, and these are needed to modify language that was in the previous Rock Island and Rocky Reach GMP resolutions so that they better align with our established contracting processes and procedures. So just to give you a background on Rocky Reach, go first here. On August 19th, the board approved resolution number 1914373 for the Rocky Reach Phase 1 facility improvements. So to go back, remember the Phase 1 work consisted of the site work, early site work package at Rocky Reach. We were working on the main site, the mainline site utilities, wet and dry utilities, doing some building demolition, and then also a new fuel island in the south yard. So Leidig Construction, our GCCM contractor, and their subs have they got started the first week of September. These photographs you can see in the slide here are of progress as of last week. So we've started the mainline utility corridor from Rocky Reach Powerhouse. This includes the water and domestic fire line, or excuse me, the domestic water line and fire line that are coming from the powerhouse out to central maintenance, along with the utility, telecom utilities, the fiber that'll feed central maintenance. Also up by the entry road, I don't have the mouse, so I can't point. Up here by the entrance road, we've installed the new duct and vault system for the distribution power. So we're rebuilding the power distribution system at central maintenance as well, getting it off of station service and all dedicated to our distribution system. 90% of the duct and vault work is done. We're going to be working with our line crews and the electrical subcontractor the next couple weeks, getting all the transformers set and conductor pulled in. This other photograph on the right here is the building demolition I talked about earlier. We have most of the buildings down, all the buildings down. This one you can kind of see in the background with this orange forklift that was taken down late last week. These are all buildings that were slated to be demolished in the Phase 1 work. This week we'll be starting on all the slab demolition and getting that out and ready for site work. So big picture, we're moving through, we're just kicking off what we call the design development phase, really starting to dig into the parts and pieces, nuts and bolts of these buildings for Phase 2. Concurrent with that, we continue to work through our cost estimates with our consultants and align them to our budget, and that'll continue through design development. We'll also be back in the spring for that with a resolution to award the Phase 2 work to Leidig Construction, which would be the buildings. We'll now turn it over to Sam. He'll give you an update on Rock Island, and then also go into a little more detail on the resolution.
So just to make sure we've done this complete, I made an error there and only read one of the two resolutions, and they're speaking to both. So for the record, I'd just like to add that this is also about item 17, a resolution authorizing the issuance of a guaranteed maximum price amendment to Leidig Construction Incorporated of Spokane Valley, Washington, to provide the Rocky Reach Central Maintenance Facility Improvements to the General Contractor Construction Manager Services for the Rock Island and Rocky Reach Hydroelectric Support Facility Improvement Projects. That. Back to you, Sam.
So, Rock Island facilities update. We've completed the work to potentially site the C-19 foundation and relocate the C-21 building, and that's what we're up here to talk about with our resolutions here in a minute or two. We've completed the heavy site work on C-22. That's the large shop, 23,000 square foot shop. It's the majority of the cost of the project. Here you can see heavy brace frames that are going in underground. These are the giant concrete blocks that you screw the steel frame to so that it doesn't overturn. This is the big down deep underground foundation work. This is a picture last week. This was actually filled with rebar and concrete was placed in it on Thursday. You can also see that we're constructing the new water reservoir, 55-foot reservoir. These are slip forms. They're pouring this at a rate of about 10 feet a week. So they've already got the second course on after this photo was taken last week, and they'll be doing the third and fourth course yet this week. So this is going to be up 15, 20 feet in the air, going very quickly. We're 90% done with the design for C-19 building. Recall that we were here in August, and we presented a business case. And at the board's direction, we're completing the design of the C-19 building. We're going to be coming back in November with a final cost for the C-19 building. We're actually to the point where we need to submit building permits. So we've submitted a building permit for the C-19 building. We're making great progress on that. We'll have our first estimated cost for that later this week, and then we'll be negotiating those costs and working to get final pricing, and we'll be coming back to the board in November. So that's our status updates. Do you guys have any questions about the two projects, how they're going, anything like that before we present the resolutions?
Commissioners, any questions?
Okay. We'll get to the resolutions now. So as Casey mentioned, his resolution for a guaranteed maximum price was authorized in August to do the work that he's underway with. Ours at Rock Island was authorized by the board in June. Both of those resolutions contained the language not to exceed without prior approval. So that's not a typical resolution for construction. Typically, we do construction and we allow for field work orders and change orders, and we follow the delegated authority process. So we have a few changes, and I'm going to talk about my change. Casey doesn't have any changes yet. I have the change to add the C-21 and C-19 foundations. C-21 in its new location, and the C-19 foundation. It's approximately $260,000. I also have a change to add $1,055 of gravel to the project. We needed to move the crane out of the yard. And I have a $611 boulder that we encountered while we were digging. I need to break apart. The resolutions implicitly direct us to come to you to ask for authorization to spend those funds. So we're here today to ask for authorization to spend those funds. And concurrently, we're going to change the resolutions to allow us to go back to the delegated authority so you don't have to deal with $600 boulders and a load of gravel being delivered to the job site.
So that you don't have to deal with it. Yes.
So this resolution is to authorize those change orders for the Rock Island project and to change both projects to the delegated authority process. Okay. Are there any questions on the resolutions?
Commissioner?
We want to ask how that happened in the first place.
It's definitely an error on staff. Yeah, the idea that we would be bringing back this level was not something that we anticipated clearly. So.
Well, they're not asking for like the gas credit card. Right?
Yeah.
Pull up the truck.
That was
we're
the
good.
One.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And that's it for our resolutions.
Okay.
I would move approval of resolutions 15, 16, and 17.
Is there a second?
Second.
So it's been moved and seconded. Is there any discussion? Hearing no discussion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The ayes have it.
Okay. With that, what we'd like to do is return back to item 10 from the study session and begin to go through the five-year business plans by business unit. And so first up will be the generation and transmission business unit. Kirk Hudson is out today, and Dave Nelson will be substituting for him.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. Dave Nelson, Business Advisor for Generation Transmission, here filling in for Kirk, and just going to run through our summary of our business plan for 2020 to 2024. We're really focusing in on some key outcomes during that time. The first of those that we want to highlight is hydro capability, moving it to 89% over that time frame. And we have a number of specific projects supporting this outcome. At Rocky Reach, completing the large turbine repairs, and with for the large units, and for units C1 through 7, the trunnion bushing replacement program is expected to progress during this time frame. At Rock Island, we anticipate nearing the completion of the modernization of Powerhouse 1, and also expect to begin the modernization of Powerhouse 2. As you can imagine, there's lots of other projects, supporting projects for these efforts. A good example was the cranes that John Sagister talked about earlier today. Additionally, for the facilities projects you just heard Casey and Sam talk about, completing the construction of those Rock Island and Rocky Reach support facilities during this time frame of the next 5 years. As you can imagine, we're pretty excited about having those facilities available for the abilities that they have to improve our maintenance efficiency and our project management and processes there at those facilities. We're also going to be going through a Discovery Center refresh, which is really an opportunity to engage the community. What a great asset we have in hydropower. We have a specific goal of annually attracting 85,000 visitors, training 100 teachers and 4,000 students on the value of hydropower, and it's just really a great opportunity we have to highlight and showcase hydropower. Other supporting activities are continuing to advance our asset management, to have strategies in place for all of our critical assets, and we're looking to explore longer equipment warranties on our projects. We're specifically looking at the potential of 20-year warranties for our Powerhouse 2 modernization as a possibility, and just striving for longer warranties on all of our major equipment and modernization contracts. We're also looking to improve our resiliency at the hydros by evaluating the benefits of having more spare parts on hand in the event of outages, and as projects come through, to be able to respond quicker to parts that would need to be replaced, and we would have those on hand to add to our resiliency. On the transmission side, supporting our distribution reliability objectives, we have a major initiative to improve our resiliency through the fire hardening of our transmission systems, and particularly high fire risk routes. The Chelan-Manson route is a good example of that, and we plan to complete that during this planning period. We also are actively planning and implementing ADMS and ADMI roadmaps to support resiliency in our distribution reliability. Plan to have open access transmission tariff rates available for potential future requests, and we will be part of a new regional transmission planning organization called Northern Grid. That'll be formed by combining most of the Columbia Grid and Northern Tier Transmission Group members. Underpinning all of these efforts, and absolutely critical in achieving them, is a continued commitment to safety. Heard a lot about that, and specifically our goal during this time frame is to move to the top quartile in safety performance as benchmarked against our peers. We're also looking to improve and continuously strengthen our cybersecurity defenses. You heard Steve talk quite a bit about the roadmaps for technology and the digital transformation roadmap in generation involves a lot of data. There's a lot of data that comes through and is available for us to use, but we need to have the tools to be able to handle the volume, be able to process that information, and be able to use it to help to become more predictive in how we analyze our hydro assets. Also, a big culture change associated with managing that data in a way that it's an asset, it's understood that it's valuable, inform decisions with it, improve processes, and really automate things. We've also mentioned the Hydro Research Institute, and by 2024, HRI's we'd like to be positioned to be recognized as a premier data resource for big data in hydro, and we've successfully so far aggregated operational data for 7 hydro plants, including from Chelan, Southern Company, and the Army Corps of Engineers, and have commitments for 110 plants between those organizations. So I went through that really fast, I know, but it really is an exciting time for our generation and transmission group. We have a lot of work ahead of us in the next 5 years, perhaps even a daunting amount of work. But it's an exciting opportunity for us to renew and improve our critical assets, for infinity and beyond. Sorry, I went a little Buzz Lightyear on you there. So, but I had 40 years and beyond, and it just didn't have the same pizzazz.
So did you say 110 hydro facilities?
Plants, hydro plants, yes.
That's a lot.
Yeah, and the idea is to get a lot of different sources there so that your data has some good representation. And
that could create real value. Yeah,
real value, sure. Any other questions?
Thanks, Dave. Good afternoon, Commissioners. John Sowell, Managing Director of Customer Utilities. It was interesting when I was putting my notes together and listening to the conversation this morning. And customer utilities, it really kind of struck me that we're transitioning from a lot of planning to getting into construction, execution, implementation of a lot of efforts. And as I work through this, I think you'll see that. So, you know, we've appreciated the support in the past to get to this point. But as Dave has mentioned, we've got a pretty ambitious work schedule ahead of us over the next, you know, next year and beyond through the strategic plan. Part of this planning effort, we realized last year that, you know, we need to look at some resiliency issues. You know, we looked at our system, and something that we've learned from down in the California area is that we have some opportunities when it comes to hopefully preventing wildfires from impacting our system, but not only that, but also helping to reduce the risk of our infrastructure causing a fire. We partner quite a bit with transmission, and you heard that from Dave, so we've done a lot of look at some vegetation practices. We've done some best practices around that. And going forward into the next strategic plan, we will definitely put a focus on that. Part of this, and related to it, is asset management. We've been at it for several years now, and we've learned a lot. One of the things that struck us this year was we've got some opportunities. It's somewhat related to the wildfire risk, but we're looking at an opportunity to replace assets before end of life. And I'll use the most relevant example, and that's what we've experienced with some small wire. That small copper wire that we have had in our system, its distribution voltage, been out there 50, 60 years, 70 years. It's served us well, but it's time to replace it. So we've got a pretty ambitious goal over these next 5 years is to remove all of it out of our system. It's pretty aggressive, but it's a challenge that we're up to. We also look at other benchmarks around reliability. You may recall from our customer satisfaction survey, our customer score is pretty high in that. But when we look at some benchmarks and we look across the industry, when you look at peer utilities, we have an opportunity there to do better. So we're going to strive for first quartile reliability, not only in outage duration, but frequency as well. So that'll be a task for us to take on. Steve mentioned this quite a bit in his earlier comments, but the last piece that we're really stepping up to is on the innovation front. We're coming around the corner in the home stretch to the customer information system. That's been in the works now for several years. We plan to go live with that early next year, and that completes what I would consider an anchor technology, a core technology that will really help set the table for moving forward on AMI, Advanced Metering Infrastructure. Steve had already mentioned the GIS system is another critical component of that, and we will do our part to support that as well. But ultimately, moving forward with the AMI, you put those three pieces of technology together, and you've really got the foundation to move forward in that advanced distribution management system that Steve and Dave had talked about. That will give us the capability from mobility to really sophisticated outage management, distribution management system. So again, we look forward over the next 5 years to putting that all in place. I'd be remiss if I didn't talk about the capacity issues. Again, this is more on what we've been dealing with over the past several years. We focused a lot on property rights, land acquisition. We've come a long way. Now we're full steam ahead into construction. We anticipate doing 7 substations. That's what our plan shows. As of now, either brand new or refurbishing some over the next 5 years. and the addition of mobilizing two new mobile substations that will give us more resiliency and capability. So again, we look forward to putting those in place. And we have also not lost sight of the ongoing effort to support the fiber build-out. We've put a lot of effort into that. We've surveyed our system. We've come a long way in putting practices and procedures in place to ensure national electric safety compliance, and recognize that it's a strong goal to meet, and we partner with fiber very well and anticipate doing that throughout this next 5 years to meet that goal. Altogether, when you look at these efforts, I see this really being a great opportunity to not only increase our safety, our innovation, but our resiliency and our reliability. The proposed budget, we put in some added resources. We see this ambitious plan will need support, so we've got resources around construction management, program delivery, contract oversight, more line resources, operational resources. Again, to help move this plan forward as we look to do a pretty significant increase in our workload. We anticipate that we don't have a perfect plan right now, but as we onboard these resources, learn more, 2020 will be another very aggressive year to put together that comprehensive, holistic plan to address all these issues. A couple other notable efforts, just to highlight, we partner very well with finance, but we will definitely be implementing, in conjunction with the strategic plan, the electric, water, and wastewater increases for the next 5 years. So we anticipate that being a key effort, as well as the new goal that came out of the strategic plan, and that's just making sure we have stable, predictable policies that support our stakeholders in the community. One of the new positions that we'll seek through the budget process is putting together that community person who will work with large accounts, requests from municipalities, the port, the county, something that we see great benefit in having in place. So in summary, we do have a very ambitious plan, but we're up for the challenge. We look forward to it. And again, we appreciate all the support we've received over the past several years and look forward to the future. That if there's any questions.
Thanks, John. Any questions, commissioners? No? Good work.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Next up, we'll talk about fiber and telecommunications. Mike Coleman.
Good afternoon. Mike Coleman, Managing Director of Fiber and Telecom. I'm going to speak to fiber first. We look at it from a perspective of how do we make a difference every single day, and we're going to continue with what we had in the past. We make a difference by providing world-class high-speed broadband transport services, which is a major essential economic driver to the county. We will continue the expansion of the fiber network to reach 85 to 90% of the county by 2026. We're also implementing a network core architecture change to layer 2. In simple terms, that means going from big iron routers that maybe cost $1 million a piece to going to switches that cost maybe a couple of $100,000, $150,000 a piece. The benefits that we gain out of it is that we get increased bandwidth. We also get improved resiliency, and we're lowering our equipment cost and our cost to expand in the future. So it's a big change for us, but it brings big benefits to us. We'll continue with our joint planning with customer utilities, as John spoke to. We're also continuing the development of our asset management plan and our disaster recovery programs. We are replacing the customer management system, what we call the portal, and in the telecom world, it's called OSS-BSS, Operational Support Systems and Business Support Systems. And so it is the platform that will support my organization soup to nuts, and it takes us into the future and allows us to truly automate our entire workflows and work processes from provisioning to repair to customer service, and gives us the added functionality of mobile workforce management. So it's truly a game changer for the fiber organization. We're going to continue to collaborate with Microsoft under the MOU that we have with them. We are analyzing alternative technologies, looking for solutions, and also enabling improved deployment while lowering the cost of deployment. And we're, again, with water, wastewater, and electrical, going to be implementing annual revenue increases in the range of 3% to offset the inflation and continue moving towards financial sustainability. We also have the similar known unknowns as we've had in the past. I will note that the dominant service provider issue is still there, but they no longer control 98% of the customers, or 98% plus. It's down to about 96.5%. So it's improving slowly. We know that there's big impacts from regulatory decisions, and it affects both John and myself. And so that's one of the known unknowns that we'll be dealing with over the next 5 years. We also know that there's emerging competing technologies, small cells, millimeter wave. And so we are working hard already to work with the aggregators, the interconnect companies, to say, how do we partner with you instead of working against you? And that's an important component of reducing the risk to the fiber program. Switching to telecom, we are just on the cusp of finishing two major projects, the microwave and the digital mobile radio. We will soon be decommissioning both systems. We have to change one switch out in the DMR because of a misunderstanding of specs, and then both projects will be complete. And we will continue on providing good telecom support across the district and making sure that we're aligned with the district needs, because you're hearing technology and innovation from every corner of the district. And so we will be helping to design the transport and scalability of those systems. We're continuing the development of the asset management program in telecom, and we're continuing analysis and enhancements of the systems that we just put in place. How do we expand coverage? How do we improve certain aspects of the system? So it was a phased approach designed from the start, and now we're going back through and saying, how can we do it better? And that's really it. A lot of work in the next 5 years.
Commissioners, Commissioner Smith, go ahead.
Yeah, back to the small cell technology. Mm-hmm. They have fiber requirements to get into place, correct?
Every single small cell has to be fed by fiber.
Yeah, okay. That
answers. It is the ultimate answer, yes.
So there are ways to work where we can provide opportunity.
There are ways, and there are aggregators and interconnects that are very much interested in working with us. So we're both looking to them, to establish a set of products that would be desirable for the cell companies. We have to make sure that our product set matches their needs.
Did you surplus that $1 million box for the $150,000 switch? Is there any market for that box, or does it just go into the pile?
It is so old that if we could get pennies on the dollar, it would amaze me.
Yeah, I'm just kind of being facetious. Yeah.
They're very old. They've served us well.
Yeah.
But there's a different way to approach it, a different way to skin the cat, to give us more flexibility and lower cost.
Mike, I have a question that really has to do more, I guess, with safety, and that's the new communication system that we're about to throw the switch on. Mm-hmm. How far reaching throughout the county will that communication system be? And case in point, I was just driving over to Seattle on Highway 2 and saw some of our lineman trucks about 10 miles east of Stevens Pass, thinking, gosh, they're way the heck out here. It just doesn't resonate with me until I see the trucks out there, just how big our service area is.
Actually, the switch is already thrown on both systems, microwave and the digital mobile radio. The initial plan called for us to achieve the same coverage that we had under the old system, because until we get the new system in and can truly do advanced radio propagation studies, we're not sure where to add points, add another repeater to expand that coverage. I will tell you that with the terrain in Chelan County, achieving 100% coverage is a very expensive, very difficult solution. So we are aware of that, and of course the radios can still work in a walkie-talkie radio, in a walkie-talkie mode, even when they're not in radio coverage. So that's a critical aspect for safety.
Yes, it is. Yeah. Okay, thanks.
Certainly.
Next up is Energy Resources and Greg Carrington.
Hi there, Greg Carrington, Managing Director of Energy Resources. Before I begin, I wanted to thank you all for the passion and the empathy that you showed this morning. You just kind of reminded me why I chose to come here 22 years ago. It's because of the passion that we all have for what we do in Chelan County. So it was very visible this morning, so I just wanted to say thank you. So the energy market, it's going to be very transformative over the next 5 years. So our business plan is set up to respond to that. And I think it's going to be almost as transformative as the formation of the energy markets back in the early 1990s, and it's also going to be as impactful as the 2001 energy crisis. And I think there are like four main reasons for that. First of all, the Northwest region of California are expected to be capacity short by next year. A report is going to be released by the Northwest Power Pool in November that depicts that. I have a summary of the report is not out for public display yet, but it will be out in November, so we're paying attention to that. The second thing that's happening is CAISO is going to be issuing what's called EDAM, which is the Extended Day Ahead Market. So the day ahead market is going to be transformed by everybody joining CAISO and participating in that market. Whereas the EIM, was about 4% of the trades, I expect that the day-ahead market will be 40 to 80% of the trades that occur in the West. That's going to impact the liquidity at mid-sea. The third thing that's going to affect the market are the carbon rules and regulations and the impact on the balance between energy capacity and carbon, the value. I expect that over the next 5 years, the value of energy is going to be on par with the value of capacity. It's going to be on par with the value of carbon. So as you can see that, one of the most critical things in the future is to pay attention to all three of those components associated with that. The fourth thing that's going to affect the market in the next 5 years is customer demand and their buying preferences. An example of that is the deal that we struck with Microsoft. There's a whole bunch of community choice aggregators or agencies in California where a lot of these independent towns and cities are saying, we no longer want to purchase, coal. We don't want to purchase natural gas. We want to be served by other resources, and they're forming their own agencies in order to get that. I think you're going to be seeing more IOUs under pressure to do that as well. All of this is going to change the dynamics as we see them on the West Coast. So how is Energy Resources going to keep up with this? So in our business plan, we're doing a few things. First of all, under the analytics and the market intelligence, we're going to be making sure that internally we're changing the way that we do business. I have three people in my group right now that are going out and getting their master's degree, as an example. We're replacing our energy management system, our accounting system, our river forecasting system, and we're also replacing all of our dispatch for all of the units at the hydro projects. These are all going to be done in the next month or so and implemented through 2020. The other thing we try to do is we try to not only monitor things that are changing, but we try to anticipate them and we try to influence outcomes from a regulatory perspective. So we have people that are spread out all over the West. We have people in Sacramento. We have somebody that's, you know, dedicated to Portland. We're in Seattle, and you'll notice that the people in our group, half of the group is here working operationally, and the other half we're out in the region trying to help make sure that we're part of the discussion that's going on. And then in response to all that, we try to provide products and services to the things that I think our customers are going to want in the future. It's not only the customers here, but it's also the customers in the region. What are the other utilities? What are the Avangrid, which is a renewable energy company, what will they be looking for, and how do we make our resources valuable to them? All of that will be then translated over the next year into a more comprehensive marketing plan. You're kind of aware of the SLICE program that we currently have and the hedging program. We continually evolve that. We also take a look at should we be more risky or less risky? What sort of implementation can we influence there? The other thing we're going to be looking at over the next year is diversifying our portfolio. What's the right mix? When you're investing in the stock market, you want to diversify your portfolio. You don't want to have all your eggs in one basket. So the portfolio between wholesale and retail, there's a proper mix that we need to encourage. And there's also the proper way of selling energy into the market as well. You don't want it to all be in slices. You don't want it to all be in daily markets, and you want to mix that as well. So we're looking for that proper mix over the next 5 years. And finally, at home, we're always looking to be more effective at the things we do, making sure we do the right things, and then being more efficient and making sure we do the right things the right way. We anticipate enhancing our energy efficiency, in order to transform into a carbon-free economy. The first thing, and Steve can attest to this, you want to do is you want to invest as much as you can into the energy efficiency. You can then use that energy efficiency to then provide more energy for our customers. We can then talk about transforming the transportation sector and using the electrified grid to do that as well. And we're also going to be working with our customers to provide energy solutions. We have customers that do want to install solar on their homes, and how do we help them do that? And we're going to be taking a look at our SNAP program as an example and trying to transform that over the next couple of years as well. So I'm going to pause there. There's a lot going on, as you can tell. Steve and I are trying to keep up with it. We literally could be at a meeting every day of the week if we wanted to, but we're trying to make sure that we go and look at the things that we feel are going to be the most important to the PUD and Chelan PUD in particular. So I'm going to pause there and see if there's any questions that you have about what we're doing.
You and Steve are trying to keep up. Where's that put us? Wow. So you made a comment about energy and capacity on a par with carbon.
Well, in the past we used to look mostly at the energy value, like the mid-C on-peak and off-peak value.
Yes.
And the thing that we're going to need to pay attention to is the value of the carbon component of that, and also the value of capacity, because all three of them, the energy component will be traded, the carbon will be traded, and the capacity. And we have to make sure that we are offering all three of those services for the market itself.
Wow. So the reason I didn't quite get it was, so carbon's moving up and on a par with energy.
Over the next 5 years, you will see carbon starting, in the past, I used to say it was 95% energy, 5% other things. Now what we're seeing is that shifting down into the 80s, and 80% energy, and then 10-10. And I think you'll see over the next 5 years that ratio is going to start to shift in a different direction. So I am going to send this around. This is the study that the Northwest Power Pool did. Steve and I presented this down last week when we were in Portland for a resource adequacy conference, a symposium. And this is this highlights for you what we're expecting to see in the Northwest in the coming years. And the graph that's on the front page is the most revealing. It shows you that we're going to go from a capacity-rich region into a capacity short region as early as next year. Steve, is there anything that you want to add to that?
Yeah, actually, I'm going to take a second on this because I was going to cover it under manager items, but probably fits better here. A year ago, I remember we brought Arnie Olson from E3 in February to describe the PGP studies, and those studies basically predicted that we were going to start having capacity problems in the region in the 2020s at some point. And those studies seem to be borne out by more recent studies. The Northwest Power and Conservation Council did some studies this summer that they have released publicly, and they show loss of load probability. We usually say 5% is the magic mark, but which you don't want to go beyond. They show 7 to 8% loss of load probability the next 3 years, and then 33% loss of load probability in 2025 when the coal plants are scheduled to be shut down under the Comprehensive Electricity Transformation Act.
When you say loss of load possibility,
probability,
what is that? Does that mean energy shortfall?
Yeah.
That means somebody service would be cut.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. That's real important. I mean,
right. Yeah. Risk of outage.
Yeah. So is that brownouts? I mean, is that considered to be brownouts?
Well, it could be a variety of things. I mean, it could be that you get, like, you know, aluminum smelters to shut down, like what happened in the energy crisis. But the problem is you then end up with them not starting back up. So it's those sorts of measures would have to happen.
Yeah, it's not enough energy to serve the projected load. So then you have to figure out how to deal with that. What actions would you take? And there are a variety of actions you can take, some of which are increases in supply, but those are things that are extraordinary actions. And you can go for decreases in demand, which are outages of some kind. Sometimes they're structured. You might pay somebody, but they're not planned, and they're not traditional way of serving load. So as a result of that work, Chelan is one of six utilities that's leading this effort in the region. Greg has played an integral part of the whole planning team that has put this together. He did an excellent presentation at the conference last Wednesday that describes what's the path forward for addressing these concerns. I gave a talk as well on the final panel that just went through what was it like to be in charge of Bonneville in 2001 when we went through this before. And the reason I mentioned this to you is I have a couple of requests since then to videotape that. People want to use it other places. So we're going to actually clip it and send it to you so you have a sense of what it is your general manager is out talking about. Because I think you might hear about it from others in terms of where this is going. And again, I mean, we've chosen to basically be the lead public power entity in this effort, believing that it's that important. Now, some could argue that actually chaos in the market is good for a utility that's long, and that's true for a short-term perspective, but that's not the way we want to make money. We would prefer a much more stable market in which there is a understanding as to what your revenues are going to be. You're not accused of market manipulation and other things that happen when you have a very volatile market that takes place. So our perspective is we would like to see an urgent need placed on addressing resource adequacy so that we will, in fact, be able to get to something that is a forecasted closer to load resource balance than what we see out there today.
And Steve is being modest because his presentation was the hit of the conference. I mean, he, the things that he had to say about his experience in 2001 were extremely impactful to the people in the audience and to moving this effort forward to make sure that the Northwest continues to take a look at the resources, and a 33% loss of load probability from all accounts is totally unacceptable. So he did a really good job.
Thank you both.
Okay, that's it.
Good. Commissioners, any other questions?
And I also like to say this is the first time in 22 years that somebody admitted that it's scary being up here. Okay. It was nice to hear somebody finally say that. Thank you.
Thanks, Greg.
Next up, we'll start getting into the corporate services. We'll start with district services.
Good afternoon. Justin Erickson, Managing Director of District Services. District Services includes a diverse collection of departments that serve internal and external customers in numerous ways. Our approximately 225 employees within this group will make a difference through the thoughtful implementation of this business plan, which provides for three overall areas of emphasis, those being, number one, supporting the success of the district's operating units. Number two, enhancing the quality of life in Chelan County by increasing the value of the district's assets. And number three, protecting the natural resources, which are entrusted to us and which, by our own plan, of course, we have a stewardship responsibility for. So I'll highlight just a few things under each of those. So under supporting the success of the district's operating units, you've heard from the operating units already this afternoon. And so our district services, in a variety of ways, will help support the plethora of activity that is contemplated over the next 5 years. Engineering and project management will have a continued emphasis on hydro assets and facilities. Our procurement and contracting and purchasing division, we will continue to seek ways to leverage our resources, review these new contracting methods that we're utilizing, and just try to be more efficient in the work that we do so that we can accomplish the things that we all want to accomplish over the next 5 years. And, of course, our permitting and licensing Fish and Wildlife departments will ensure that we meet our compliance obligations and our responsibilities that we have relative to the work that we do with the operating units. Also wanted to note a number of departments that you may not hear a lot about, but also provide a lot of support for around the district. And those include areas such as fleet, warehouse, lands and facilities, and real estate, and office services, and others. So they don't always have an opportunity to be before you for a particular reason. So I did want to highlight those. Respective to quality of life enhancements, of course, public power benefit, and the opportunity that we have with early action are two that stand out. But so do the responsibilities that we have relative to our 15 parks that add so much to the quality of life in the county. And we will continue to improve and enhance those attributes that make this a special place to live and call home. Our communications and external affairs staff will continue to tell our story. And I think based on the comments you just heard from Greg, that's particularly important in changing markets and with changing legislation. And so two that are highlighted in the one-page plan that you have are the fire risk strategy and tax parity. Of course, there are many others as well that we will stay engaged with. Also want to make sure that we engage with our customer owners. We can continue to maintain good trust and also with our Latino Hispanic customer owners and continue to improve and enhance our outreach. We made strides with the strategic plan that was just updated compared to previous efforts, and we'll continue to learn from that experience and do more. Lastly, protect the natural resources entrusted to us. There's a lot in our five-year plan related to this item. So we have a very important habitat conservation plan milestones. We have survival verification studies that we'll be conducting and be able to verify that we're meeting our metrics in 2021. That will culminate in the comprehensive progress report and that's due in 2023. So we issued a report in 2013. So this is a 10-year report where we will hopefully continue to confirm our great success with that effort, which includes 91% or greater combined adult and juvenile survival, and then our 9% compensation in hatchery and tributary programs. Of course, we will be starting down the path of relicensing in North Rock Island, so lots of resources dedicated to that and implementation of a full strategy. So we look forward to working on that over the next 5 years in earnest. Also have some miscellaneous things such as our responsibilities that we may have under the MPDS permit that you'll hear a little bit about later, and our responsibilities that may come as a result of conditioning any permit approval. And we will continue down the path, the successful path that we've charted with the Department of Ecology and the Chelan River use attainability analysis. This work will require some added resources. So as we look to the scope of projects over the next 5 years, we do contemplate adding some resources in engineering and project management, related to engineering and technical project management ability, GIS, which you've heard about quite a bit already, and the need to make sure that GIS resources are ample to handle the innovation that is contemplated. And then some additional resources in our real estate department as well as we look at building out substations and transmission routes and easements and, of course, the effort, the heavy lift associated with relicensing. We know that we will need some greater resources there as well. So I look forward to the challenges ahead and the support that we provide to the operating units. Be happy to answer any questions that you have.
Commissioners, any questions?
Thank you.
You've done such an excellent job. No questions.
All right.
Thank you.
Next up, we'll be talking about human resources. Lauren is out today. Felicity Saberhagen will be covering for her.
Good afternoon. Unfortunately, Sydney was not available to come up and do this presentation this afternoon. She's off in the afternoon, so you get me. So, Felicity Saberhagen, business advisor here on behalf of the Human Resources Department to present the highlights of our five-year business plan. Linking back to our strategic plan, one of our primary focuses is to support our goal of investing in people. By investing in our people, we create more opportunities for their success, which in turn creates a lot more success for the organization and ultimately benefits our customer owners. This has not changed from prior years. Also not changed is HR's overarching goal to support the district in our pursuit of operational excellence. As in years past, we provide guidance to leaders and staff to become the best that they can be. We seek to accomplish this by developing and supporting effective team leaders, as well as by facilitating an environment that staff can be held accountable while they pursue their individual mastery. What is also not changing in the cycle is our ongoing effort to create greater diversity, attract and retain best talent, and effectively and efficiently manage benefits and compensation. Although investing in our people is not something new, what is new for our five-year plan is our focus. New in this planning cycle will be the development of job-specific opportunities and training for both leadership staff as well as staff that are subject matter experts. We feel this is foundational for staff in their pursuit of individual mastery so that they can contribute in full to the lofty plans that we have going forward. One of the challenges that we face, as well as other organizations, are the impacts from changes in regulations governing employment law. These changes have led to an increase in staff time dedicated to implementing the necessary changes in processes and policies to support this effort. You'll see this reflected by an increase in the number of actions and initiatives supporting both how we can position ourselves to both influence as well as respond to legislative proposals and actions. An additional challenge worth noting and mentioned in the district's strategic plan is managing the loss of institutional knowledge due to retirements. Over this five-year window, roughly one-fifth of our workforce will become retirement eligible. And looking out even further, one-third will become eligible within the next 10 years. And we can't predict when people will choose to retire, but what we can do is position ourselves so that when they do retire, we can retain that institutional knowledge and support critical operational functions. The effort to create those job-specific planning is one of the efforts that we're doing to help mitigate that risk. In summary, we're putting forward a plan that supports our continued long-term strategic goal to invest in our people while we strive to be an agent of change, to continue stimulating our employees in their pursuit of operational excellence. Can I answer any questions for you today?
Commissioners, questions?
I don't mean to put you on the spot because you're filling in, so I thank you for doing that. But one of my curiosities is when you talk about the percentages in the next 5 years of people retiring or even farther out, up to a third, is that percentage any different now than in past, or is it just business as usual that we've got to keep working at preparing for that turnover and that loss of institutional knowledge?
Absolutely. Great question. So our largest block of employees right now is between the ages of 45 and 60. So that is a little bit atypical of organizations. We usually would have a more proportionate means of staff. So we're certainly a little bit lighter when you look at the distribution on lower end of employees. So realistically, you would expect to see probably about 25% over that 10-year period. So that's a little bit high.
Mm-hmm. Thanks.
You're welcome.
The question about institutional knowledge being lost is a problem at employers all across America. And I'm glad to hear that you're paying attention to that. It's a significant issue.
That's right. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks. Great. Any other questions? Great.
Thank you.
Thank you much.
Okay. Next up, new to this year, as a new business unit, Safety and HPI Operating Unit Business Plan, Tim Pettit will be presenting.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. Tim Pettit, Director of Safety and Human Performance. As I've heard a few other things mentioned with our strategic plan in generation and transmission, they tied back to safety being very important with them, too, and reaching the top quartile. The general manager and I have had many discussions on where we need to get and how we need to get better. I was really pleased to hear that. We plan to make a difference for the district customer owners by developing and promoting an operational culture that minimizes the impacts of errors on quality, production, and safety, and maximizes our learning abilities through collaboration and continuous improvement, and exceeds regulatory compliance. And I think that's critical. Compliance is a lot, something that we have to do. And through a lot of discussions, compliance is just a beginning point for us. We want to operate well above that. And I think that's the reason we appreciate your support and focus on where we're trying to go. Revisit just a little in 2019, we've been on a focus of applying our HPI 5 plus 5, which are the principles and concepts. I think we're all getting pretty familiar with those. The primary focus has been for us to understand errors, why or how they occur, and how we can change our mindset to approach work. Actually, in all tasks, it doesn't necessarily have to be turning a wrench, but doing a report, doing a number of things, we make errors in all of those. And how we do that differently. There's been an emphasis on putting barriers in place so that when we fail, we do fail safer and that we return home to our whys. We've talked about that in a few meetings and how critical that is. As we continue to strengthen our understanding of HPI and how our mindset affects our behavior, we're going to begin a journey on how we objectively measure operational and safety excellence. And that's all to move us to the top quartile in safety amongst our peers. We'll be looking at a number of other businesses as we do this, but we've had some discussions, and really comparing us against our peers is going to be critical to make sure we're moving in the right direction. In 2020, we'll begin to develop a pilot program utilizing research and benchmarking with a focus on the Campbell Institute and their five areas for best practices. You may not have heard much about the Campbell Institute, but they're a worldwide leader in environmental health and safety excellence. And those five areas that we'll be focusing on are leadership and how that embeds throughout the company. A lot of that is within our business and performance plans, and we see that happening already. Second is integration, which is moving environmental health and safety into all facets of the business. We use audit programs. We have a contract program manager now that has created a number of different ways that we focus on our contractors depending upon the work they do. We want to make sure we're measuring that and we're doing that consistently and properly. Data management, which is gathering key performance indicators and monitoring them, leading indicators and their ability to prevent undesirable effects is going to be a real focus for us. We have to report on the lagging indicators, but we want our focus to be on leading indicators and let those help with the numbers on our lagging indicators. Alignment, which is linking environmental health and safety goals to other objectives, and we do that by taking a look at a number of different things, but looking for continuous improvement in all areas, even areas we think we're doing real well. We'll be looking into that through this pilot program. Corporate citizenship is their fifth, and that is promoting off-the-job safety and community involvement also. And we believe the district does a fantastic job of this. And so as we move into this pilot program and we figure out how we're measuring this and what it means to us, some of those are the Hydropower STEM Academy. We do Touch a Truck. We do Pizza Pop and Power Tools. We have employees that go to schools and talk to the students on our apprenticeships and our trades. We talk about losing people, and the vast majority that are leaving have a lot of that knowledge, but they're out there searching to bring young people in, which I think is fantastic. And so we'll be looking at just how we measure that and what's that mean. And we'll be using this pilot program again to gather usable data that'll help drive our mindset and culture in a positive direction. It'll help us understand if becoming a member of the Campbell Institute is actually going to be our target, or does this information and continued transformation drive in another direction? And what I mean by that is we're involved in Western Energy Institute, APPA, a number of other avenues. But as we use this criteria to develop this pilot program, it could lead us in another direction. We have reached out to APPA and a number of others, and I think they're very curious to see where we go, because there's not a lot out there to measure against this, so it's going to be quite a journey. And really, it's all about learning and resulting in a stronger organization and understanding that is truly the best for the districts and its employees and our customers. Hopefully, before long, you'll start seeing personal stories from our own employees that reflect what we're trying to accomplish here. So, any questions?
Commissioners?
No. Just said one of the things that you see here is Tim had a huge assignment when he came in terms of the array of activities we were taking on, everything from compliance issues to responding to the fatality and all of the follow-up action items that came out of that. One of the areas that we had set a goal for ourselves was could we get a set of benchmarks that we could say we're going to measure against. And honestly, and I think you described it, we've struggled with that. We haven't found something that others are using that's just really clear and on point to what we want to do. And that's led us to this pilot program approach and using the Campbell Institute measures. Try those out and see if those are the things that actually make sense for us and get us to where we want to get to. And hopefully within the next year, we can come to a conclusion about, yep, this is working and we're going to stick with this, or no, we need to try something else.
Good. Great. Thanks, Tim.
May we take five?
Yeah.
Yes.
Thank you.
We will take a 5-minute break.
Actually, we're doing pretty good. We just have the...
Okay, we are back in session.
Next up, we'll be doing the Finance, Risk, and Information Technology presentation. Kelly Boyd will be up.
So, good afternoon. Kelly Boyd, Chief Finance and Risk Officer. And I'm going to do Finance, Risk, and IDT kind of in two different spots. So, to start with, for Finance and Risk, we will make a difference by promoting prudent financial risk and data analytic disciplines to support decision-making, to keep the district financially resilient, which then leads to keeping our rates stable and affordable for our customer owners. Some of the key ways we'll do this is by remaining among the top financially rated power utilities in the country, maintaining our debt leverage below 35%, and maintaining the confidence of our customer owners by achieving clean financial opinions and audits. Some of the key activities that will support this is the continued debt reduction with our scheduled principal payments and continuing to work on our cost of service analysis to support the retail revenue planning actions through our strategic plan. And we also have some new items, including preparing the organization for reinitiating borrowing in this 5-year planning horizon, and implementing the technology roadmap for finance and risk, as you heard about, is our business intelligence data analytics roadmap. So we will be implementing that to advance our data-driven decision-making. We'll also be having some innovation in our finance systems as we automate our processes. And it sounds kind of cool that we get to use robotics for some of the reconciliations that are standard. And so it sounds cooler than it is. But when you're when you're an accountant, you try to take those opportunities to sound cool. And then we'll also, a new item is to expand our benchmarking to be kind of a district-wide program. I think you've heard a few areas mentioned their benchmarking activities. And this will be an effort to kind of expand what we're all doing and then have it centralized for accessibility, storage, consistency, and not duplicating efforts if we've already had some of the information compiled. For IT, we'll make a difference by helping all staff achieve more through the use of information and technology. We will be relentless in protecting the district against cybersecurity risks and continuously strengthen our programs based on industry principles, analysis, and guidance. We will continue to provide a highly available, secure, and resilient computing environment. And we will partner with other business units to provide technical tools and processes to help them achieve their goals. So I think when you looked at those technology roadmaps and all of the interaction there, you can definitely tell that we'll take all of us together to be successful in implementing that new technology. So one of the key unknowns for IT is around staffing levels and what's the right level of technical staffing that it will take to achieve all those really large initiatives like the AMI, ADMS, and mobile computing. So automated meter infrastructure, the advanced distribution management system, mobile computing, all of those ones that you saw on the list. So those really are a lot of our new items, because in addition to those, well, that last line you saw on that roadmap was IT foundational infrastructure. So included in that is keeping all of our foundational technology up to speed to be able to support those. So some of the things that you don't see in that are included are systems like our governance, risk, and compliance, the new fiber portal that Mike mentioned, for storage and retrievability. That's keeping our both our hardware and our software focused on that. And every one of those roadmaps kind of has its own component to support that. So I think by the key for all of this to achieving success will be partnering all of us together throughout the organization to achieve the new technology.
Commissioners, thoughts, comments?
That's a ton of work.
And Kelly, I guess, you know, what I'm referring to earlier in my earlier questions is in almost every presentation today, I've seen an increase in data storage, data analytics, utilization of data, you know, and so, you know, the curiosity then is where are we putting all of that and how accessible is it? And, you know, and so I don't doubt the commitment to it or anything. I'm just, I guess, more, you know, just interested in a physical sense of where is it, you know, and are we, you know, addressing capacity issues in that area? Because when you look at AMI, you just look at what you just described, you know, and financial and data analytics and, you know, retrieval in a timely manner. You know, are we looking at data compression? I mean, I just have a lot of questions.
Right. So here's my chance to be kind of geeky to you. So it's not only about that physical retention also, but it's treating the data as an asset. Mm-hmm. And how do you have the right protocol, the right consistency? You take care of it as you should.
Yeah.
Across the organization, you use it the same so that the accuracy of it, no matter where you retrieve it from. So there's a lot of challenges around that. So that's definitely on our horizon.
Is it retrievable, but how quickly is it retrievable? You know, and I guess I'm coming out of a data analytics background where we did for Dodge Motorsports, and he could do real-time analytics in the seventh lap of a Daytona race, you know, in like I say, in real time. And those were million-dollar decisions, you know, multi-million-dollar decisions, and it had to be done in real time. And I know what it takes to store and to retrieve and to respond. And so I'm just curious.
Yeah, and we're not dissimilar, because I think what Greg was talking about in some of his even energy market changes of maintaining four-second information, and you'll hear of that in the, you know, independent operations. So it's in all the places you wouldn't even think of, too, the challenge of data.
Yeah.
So we'll make that clear when we come back with the detailed IT roadmap. And, you know, certainly some of those questions also get to cloud versus centralized storage and which path to go. And that raises a whole bunch of cybersecurity issues. So it's a good question, and there's a lot to that question. And we'll come back with some responses to that.
Yeah, a lot of options. Oh, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Kelly.
Okay, and last up, but not least, legal and compliance. And Katie's going to step in for Eric on this one.
Yeah, Katie Yant. I'm filling in for Eric Walquist. Our role is really to support all of the other business units and all of these exciting things that they're doing and to support the board. I picked just a few of the highlighted areas that we know are coming. We plan to help manage the district's increasing compliance obligations and risks. We're going to engage in the Rock Island relicensing strategic planning efforts, conduct audit reviews, and provide assistance. We'll advise the district on all state and federal legislative efforts and changes. We'll facilitate the public power benefit and provide cost-effective legal support for the district's reinvestment efforts to include Rock Island rehab and Rocky Reach generation repairs, and be available for whatever else comes up.
That's good. Commissioners, any thoughts, questions for Katie?
The hard part is be available for all the other little things that come up.
Yes, it keeps it interesting.
That's probably the biggest part of the job, really, is everything else category.
You never know what's coming up each day, but keeps it interesting and exciting.
That's a nice way of putting it. Thank
you, Katie.
So I'd just like to finish all of the business unit plans with a summary of where we're at. First of all, we feel good about the fact that these plans do not compromise on best for the most for the longest. If you get into any sort of a financial pinch, you tend to have to make those trade-offs, and we haven't felt like we've had to make those trade-offs with this set of plans. We are, as you can see, taking what is the newly adopted, a few hours, strategic plan and incorporating it in these business plans. So you see the increased focus on asset investment. You can see a commitment to public power benefit. We're moving forward with making sure that we're a financially resilient organization, and at least beginning to think through the economic growth issues and how they will affect the district. So all of those are a part of these business plans. It is a very big workload, and so we are dealing with resource issues, and we'll be coming back to you on that over the course of, as we get to the individual years, particularly the 2020 budget. We'll be coming back to you with a discussion about that, what we think it would take to implement the full array of plans that we've got here. If you have any feedback for us on this, it'd be helpful to get it over the course of the next week or two. It'd be better if it was the next week, because it allows us to better incorporate that for future board meetings. Our goal is to finalize these business plans for the Q3 report, and then to move to the discussion about the 2020 budget. And as you know, we like to have that budget adopted by the first meeting in December. So we're moving along in a pretty quick pace here over the course of the next 60 days to have an adopted budget for fiscal year 2020. With that, we're actually in really good shape right now to have a district performance plan adopted before the end of the year as well, based on what you've seen here today. So we would be taking what you've seen here today and translating that into a district performance plan. In fact, we already have an initial draft of that based on what you can see. So all of this fits together so that we can be in a position that at the beginning of the calendar year, we have a budget, we have a performance plan, and we're off and running on January 1st.
Yes, Commissioner Congdon.
Steve, now I know why this is getting easier for me, because everything is now so aligned and follows logical steps, at least for me. So I really appreciate that. It's just so much easier for me to follow and tie it all together. Yeah.
Best thing is if there are no surprises for you here. Right. We've talked about it. This is the direction that we're going.
And that's very helpful. Yes, Commissioner Smith.
Just a sort of a philosophical comment that, you know, I think about, I've been a commissioner now for 13 years, and the first half dozen years or so seems like it was a good portion of the time spent putting out fires. And we didn't have the time, and senior management did not have the time at that moment in time to take that look, that long look down and look out 5 years in a holistic sense like we are now. And it is such a refreshing place to be planning holistically for the entire utility, for all aspects of the utility going forward. And I thank Steve, and I thank all of the senior staff and everybody that's been working on that we've gotten to this place, and it charts a path forward. And I feel like for the last several years now, we as a board have been looking forward, as we should as a board, rather than looking at the here and now. And I think that's a real neat place for me as a commissioner to be able to be looking to the future and next generation. And that's what I feel like we should be all about. So thank you.
Yeah, my comment would be very similar to that, worded a little bit differently. Again, 13 years ago, we kind of, at time, lurched our way forward as an organization made up of silos. And now we're moving forward with the organization following parallel paths. And I think that's just huge, that when you move from silos to parallel paths, your organization has changed tremendously. And it's much appreciated.
Well, we certainly appreciate the feedback. Thank you for that.
Yeah.
Okay, so we are done with the regular agenda, and we are ready to move to manager's items if you're ready. First up, I want to invite Michelle Smith to come up and talk a little bit about the National Pollution Discharge, I should know this, NPDE Elimination System. Yes, there we go. Thank you, Michelle.
Thankfully, that has an initialism that goes with it, NPDES, we refer to that. But thank you for that introduction, Steve. So as part of our settlement agreement with Columbia Riverkeeper, on September 19th, we filed applications to Ecology for those NPDES permits with Ecology, and that was meeting our deadline as per the settlement agreement with them. So we wanted to let you know that we did get those filed on time. We don't know exactly, just to be honest, what exactly those permits will look like once we receive them. We've been looking at what typically they do include, and it's normally a lot of sampling and reporting. So we expect that will be what will come out of those permits once we get them. The other advantage here is that typically Ecology works collaboratively with us as they're developing the permit. So we don't expect to just get a surprise permit one day. We expect to kind of get a glimpse of what we're going to be receiving before we actually get it. So we will certainly keep management apprised as we start looking and seeing more of that. I do want to say I'm sitting up here telling you this, but there was a rather large team that it took to get these applications pulled together. Took us 6 months to do, and Jennifer Burns really led the charge with the application. But I just want to list some folks that helped on this. Penny Holbert, Steve Sombretsky, Brooke Hildebrandt, Charles Von Reese, Marcy Clement, Martha Whiteman. We had some outside help legally with Still Reeves, Michael Campbell. And then we also had James Bogue from McMillan Consulting helping us with that effort. So kudos to that team, but I just wanted to let you know we got those applications in on time.
Big effort, a lot of people. Thank you to everyone. Commissioners, any questions, comments for Michelle? No? No, I have one. How'd you like all that snow?
Yes. You know, the damage that the weight of that snow did to our trees was incredible because none of the foliage is off yet. So that heavy, you know, foot just brought down branches. And
Lots of trees are broken in the neighborhood. Yeah, yeah.
So that was the worst part, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Well, thank you. But,
yeah. Michelle's going to stay. She's going to talk a little bit about the Horan visioning process that's going on as well.
So about I looked at my calendar, actually, early August, I was in front of you talking about the visioning process that we are just embarking on for the Horan Natural Area. This was really kicked into full gear because of the Confluence Parkway proposal. We had a lot of stakeholders starting to ask questions about what the future of that area would look like, and also, you know, who's running the show on all of this. So we thought that there was a huge opportunity here for the Chelan PUD to step up along with state parks at our side and really educate the local community and the public about the natural area, what how license is involved with that, how our managing objectives tie into what they see there for trails and education. And also we wanted to provide an opportunity for the public to really tell us how they use the area, what they love about it, what they would like to see us do better, or what they maybe what improvements they'd like to see there, and then also really to get a sense on what we should be doing in the future. And this is why we're calling it kind of a visioning exercise: what we should be doing to protect that resource for our public and for the environmental stewardship opportunities that it affords there. There's a lot of pressures, outside pressures coming that are continue to kind of push in on that area, and we want to try and protect that. It's very unique, and we want to try and protect that. So to get to the open house, we have decided on November 6th. That will be, there'll be a midday and an early evening session. That's a Wednesday. The afternoon session will be 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., and I will send this all out in an email, too, so you don't have to get it all today. And then there'll be a 4:30 to 6:30 p.m. session. It'll be at the CTC. And we're really excited. We're going to have a kind of an introduction PowerPoint where we'll talk about the management objectives by State Parks and Chelan PUD. And then we're going to let people break out into workshop-style areas of the room. So if people are interested in birding and the wildlife, we'll have Vaughn and we'll have our technical experts available to talk to them about their interests. We'll have state parks there. We'll have cultural resources there. We'll have Ryan from recreation components. So we'll have various workshop areas where people can go to. And then we're also going to be collecting information from them. We'll have cards that people can fill out questions or what they like about the area. And we'll have a set of a way for us to collect information to take back from that. We have a fact sheet that we're going to be putting all this on our website. There'll be a fact sheet and a survey that people can fill out ahead of time. We're going to do, with the help of communications and Neil and Kimberly, we have press releases we're gearing up for. We've got newsletter, lots of print ads, social media, of course, a web page I mentioned, and a flyer. So we're really doing kind of a full press on this and trying to get the word out and see if we can get a lot of people interested.
That's good.
Darn, I'm going to miss it.
Commissioners, any thoughts, comments for Michelle? That's great. That's wonderful. Good.
And we will report back. So we'll make sure that you guys hear what we learned from all of that.
Good. Thank you.
Great. Thank you.
Next up is going to be John Stoll. While he's coming up, I just want to take a second. If you haven't been out to Rocky Reach this year, I was out there last Friday, and as good as the grounds look on a regular basis, this year they are absolutely outstanding, and you should really just stop in and take a look at the flowers and the grounds before winter closes in, and they're all going to go away. So it's only going to be another few weeks that's going to be there. But it's worth it to get out there. John?
Thanks, Steve. A couple things. Number one, just wanted to talk about next Monday. That is Columbus Day, October 14th. Over the past several years, we look for training opportunities. It's a slow day. Most people assume we're closed given the holiday. This year, it's imperative. We take a training day with the new CIS coming up. So it's an opportunity as we move into the training phase of the project. You get a wide group of folks, not only the customer relations staff, but the people who touch the product, the system for doing field orders, things of that nature. It's a good opportunity to, again, really have a strong, dedicated, formal day of training. So that's what we'll be doing next Monday. We'll follow the protocol we normally do. We work with communications. We get the word out. We do have emergency contacts if needed, but again, it's generally a slower day for us, so it makes sense to take advantage of that. Secondly, Ron Slabaugh came and visited me at lunch today, so it's an opportunity to update you about a reservoir situation. We have a small reservoir up on Wenatchee Heights. You may recall we had an incident last June where they found some mice in the reservoir. Well, on inspection today, they found one. So it's creating a boil water advisory and a sampling routine with the Department of Health that kind of oversees that. But a positive sign of this is an old reservoir that's been out there for a while. Past several months, they've been constructing a new one. It goes online Wednesday. So it's unfortunate it wasn't a week earlier, but nevertheless, we'll be able to take that old reservoir out of the system.
You know, the mice just always have crummy timing.
I know.
We got to train them better.
Ron and his team, they'll go out, and, you know, it's a handful of customers, so they can communicate directly as well as give them some bottled water as well.
Great. Thanks, John.
Thank you.
Appreciate that.
Next up, Greg Carrington and Melissa Lyons are going to talk a little bit about an external audit we had done on environmental attributes. Oh, Melissa's going to do it. She doesn't need Greg's help.
All right. Hi. So I've been asked to do a quick update or provide you some information on an audit. We worked with a consultant earlier this spring to do an audit of our environmental accounting. And this followed an audit by internal audit in 2017. Both audits, there was no issues that were found at all, but we wanted to just kind of give a chance for you guys to hear from us on this. It's a relatively new thing that we've been doing, so it's something that's evolved out of different carbon regulations and renewable regulations that have gone into effect both in Washington State and outside of Washington State. And it's a process that we go through on a monthly and annual basis to make sure that any claims on our generation are supported and that you know, our RPS compliance requirements are met. If we sell specified source, anybody that buys that can support their claims. And it makes sure there's no double counting. So that's kind of the quick version of the update. And then I can take questions if you have any.
This is really important to us because there are a lot of folks in California claiming that hydro is not actually hydro that's coming down, and being able to trace all the way through maintains the value for our assets, and reputation risk is incredibly important in this marketplace. So the work that this team has done to make sure that, in fact, what we're selling can be validated all the way through and that we have third-party sources looking at, I think, is extremely important.
Yeah, and it's on a per-megawatt-hour basis. Like, we are telling counterparties and ourselves what megawatt-hours every hour from every single project where they can be claimed. So I said monthly and annual, and that is the roll-up, but, I mean, it's literally down to hour by hour.
Melissa, do we provide this to not only prospective buyers, but those that have already purchased from us in the past?
We wouldn't provide it to potential buyers because it's all, you know, it's volumes that's kind of our ability to market that. We wouldn't necessarily give that away. But what we do, it's all the buyers that have actually contracted with us. So if we've sold them 100 megawatts that they take to California, they have to have the documentation to support the claim that they make in California that it was hydro that they imported. And so we're providing it to them.
Good. Good.
Yeah.
Thank you. Commissioners, any other questions? Nope.
Okay.
Thank you.
Next up, Mike Coleman's going to talk about some customer meetings that we have on the fiber expansion program that are coming.
So I wanted to update you on the customer meetings that are scheduled for this week. Have a few of the charts and graphs and stuff that will be used. We're doing three customer meetings, one in Leavenworth, Eniat, and Manson. All of them are 4:30 to 6:30 p.m. Leavenworth's at the PUD auditorium. Eniat is at the fire hall, and Manson is going to be at the Grange Hall. So we wanted these to be both informational and educational. We're going to have four key areas in the open house so they can come anytime and they can spend their time at whatever area they really choose. We want to tell them what we've accomplished in the last 3.5 years. And so we have two boards up there. The first one covers the expansion and infill areas for 2019 as well as some of the statistics. The second one is the PPB program. Inception to date. I fully acknowledge that the folks that haven't gotten fiber are not going to be happy, but I want them to understand that over 3,000 other folks have gotten access to the fiber. So there's four areas, where we are and what we've accomplished. How do we decide where to build next, which is always a key question. And we've got some information to start the conversation with them. One of the key rules is we follow the electrical infrastructure and we have to look at the type of infrastructure it is. And then we have a series of questions which really go to our criteria. You know, is it engineered and or is engineering and design complete? Are permits and easements ready? Is a new node required? And are the resources going to be available in that time frame, whether they're internal or contract resources? So we are going to then have a third station, which is the economic drivers. How do we get the best for the most for the longest? What are the things we look at and what are the economic drivers? And last is the what's next? What comes after PPB? What are we doing now to prepare for the future? We're going to talk about the alternative solutions for broadband needs. We're going to talk to them about the collaboration we're doing with Microsoft, and particularly looking at alternative technology, alternative solutions, and how do we lower our cost of deployment. And that we will be investigating, can we speed up the PPB bill with a decision in somewhere in the first quarter of 2020. I know that Commissioner McKenna has said he will be at Leavenworth. I don't know if any of the rest of you are available.
I'll be at Eniat and Manson.
Okay.
So I was just going to say, Mike, even if people don't, some people aren't going to like what they see or hear, I think they appreciate really clear, regular updates. You know, the more they hear from, because we get questions all the time, and I'm really not sure where we're at. But if we could somehow get out more regular communication about this, I think it would be helpful. I know you try. I know you try really hard to do that. Yeah. Little do I know, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I hear you loud and clear. And we'll see what we can do to improve that.
Mike, thank you for your public outreach and the transparency and the openness in the discussion. That it's been my experience over my lifetime that even if you deliver a message that somebody isn't going to get internet or broadband and fiber at this time, if you explain the reason and logically can explain these are the steps that we have to go through, it makes it much easier, and people are generally understanding about that. We're moving in that direction. It will happen, just not this year. So thank you for doing that public outreach.
Appreciate it.
I'll leave Kim to lead.
Commissioners, I'm here to say happy Public Power Week to you all. Looking forward to working with Mike on the open houses. That is, of course, one of the essential tenets of being a customer-owned utility, is that we talk with our customers and we need them to be involved in the decisions that are happening. So that's what we try to do, is give them that stakeholder feeling in what their hometown utility is doing. The other thing that's great about Public Power Week is what's happening here today, which is that local control that comes from locally elected commissioners. So I just want to thank you all. If you're in Leavenworth or Wenatchee, or Leavenworth or Chelan, Wednesday afternoon, there will be donuts and cider along. So a little sweet enticement for the folks that will be asking for their ideas about the displays in the new office building that's part of the service center. And then we'll be doing the same thing here in Wenatchee on Friday between 11:30 and 1:30. And then the timing of all of our extensive outreach on strategic planning and the other, the Discovery Center, kind of all came together at Public Power Week as well. So we're doing our traditional public event this year on Sunday at Fall Harvest Roundup at Rocky Reach. So we'll be part of that big, huge event, tough to turn down, an audience of about 2,500 people. Looking forward to that. Hope maybe you'll come. Costumes are encouraged. And Susan Gillen and I and other conservation staff will be there. We'll be talking about the Home Energy Audit Pilot Program and encouraging people to sign up. We'll have the ability to do that. And then I'll be there with a little bit different hat on, with the Discovery Center hat on, providing more of a sneak peek into what's coming as we come up on the big event on November 1st. And then that 18 months of renovation that are coming, and we're hoping to keep people involved during that time. So thank you.
Great. Good.
Kimberly, did you say all afternoon? Just kind of open house all afternoon?
So for the donuts, oh yes, in Chelan it is, 1 to 5. Okay. Yep. Stop by.
Question. When yes? is the when is the Lady of the Lake boat event?
Oh, I need to email you back. It is this month. And it's later than usual, so I'll do a quick check and get that information back to you.
You know what? I have it here somewhere, and I wondered if it really was that late.
Yes, different, little bit different approach this year. What we found is
19th.
There you go. That's perfect. We're actually looking forward to that little bit later. The lake will be down. We'll be able to show folks a few more things at that time. So that's why we're looking forward to that.
Kim, could you send something out to all the commissioners on that?
I would be happy to.
Thank you.
That's it for manager items for today.
Okay, well, next on the agenda is commission items. I think Commissioner Boltz had it.
Yeah, I think I sent all of you a copy of the next Energy Northwest, and I have a rather nebulous medical calendar coming up toward the end of this month, 1st of November, so I just don't know. You know, at this moment, whether I'm going to be available or not. And so what I'm asking, is there a commissioner that would be willing to cover the end of the month, 1st of November, Energy Northwest meeting in the Tri-Cities? So it's Wednesday night. It would be checking into the motel the 30th. 31st from 8 until 12:30 is the board meeting. In the afternoon from 12:30 to 5 is the Public Power Forum with a reception that evening. And then if you have not toured the B reactor and would like to, on Friday, November 1st, would be a tour of the B reactor from 8:15 to 1:30. So we have business to take care of and some education opportunity, should there be a likely person who would want to commit to do that.
I'm gone.
Down to 2.
Got the night at the museum stuff.
I know, then that's at 4, I think. That's at 4. Starts at 4. 3. On Friday.
Friday the 1st? Mm-hmm. Yeah, the actual meeting is over at 12:30 at noon on Wednesday. So it would be the Public Power Forum and the B Reactor Tour on Friday. So they would be ancillary activities, not the actual business meeting. And the crux, the concern that I have is the, I think part of the agenda will be the discussion on the acquisition of NOAANet. And I think that's an important thing that we weigh in on.
What can I say? Okay.
Okay.
You're going to let me know if you're not going to do it.
Let's just plan on me not doing it. And I wish I had a better answer for you. I just don't. I'll know more next week, but I don't know.
I'll talk to you further.
Okay.
Okay, commissioners, any other?
So, well, and then I think we need to talk about NOAANet a little bit. Is that something that we would advocate Energy Northwest to do?
I don't.
Or not to do?
I don't think we have enough information yet.
Mm-mm. I need a lot more information.
I think they're still in their discovery. And
right.
I think there's more, quite a bit more information that needs to be gathered.
Okay.
Yeah. That would be an executive board decision. But the full board will inform the executive board. Is that what you're saying? The Energy Northwest full board will have a discussion, make a recommendation to the executive board?
I believe that's the pathway.
So Dennis, could you give me the dates again?
This particular meeting?
Yes, so it's October.
So the check-in for the motel would be Wednesday night the 30th. And then the business meeting is the next day from 8 to 12:30. And then a public power forum after that and a reception. And then Friday would be the B Reactor tour.
Okay, so the 31st would really
31st be. Would cover the business aspect.
Okay.
That'd probably be a three-hour drive, three-hour drive for
you. It's about two and a half. Not that we make a drive to the Tri-Cities often.
So just a comment. We used to, we being Chelan PUD, used to belong to NOAANet. And we stepped out, and that was a long involved, well, maybe not a long involved process, but we had a lot of discussion, and there was a lot of input. And so I think it's important that we have, or you have, the history of Chelan's involvement.
We have the history. The three of us, they do not.
Right. I don't remember it very well, but I mean, that I know that much, and I kind of know why. But well, I never knew exactly why. But so, yeah.
I think it'd be, from my perspective, it'd be really good to have our management folks provide us, especially Mike Coleman,
For sure.
Some input in this whole arena.
And Mike Coleman is highly respected at Wapoota. He's been the chair of the telecom committee and always received great kudos for how he led that group. So he would be really a good one.
So, and I think for me, the concerns are, the profitability of NOAANet, the fact that its debt is increasing and it has a pension liability. And so, we originally stepped away from NOAANet because we felt the business operation was not as stable as we would like to be a part of. And I think we're still there, in terms of the instability. So anyway, that's just one commissioner's opinion.
And one other commissioner's opinion was that we asked for financial information and it just wasn't forthcoming.
Never got it.
Back then or recently?
Back then.
It's been quite a while.
Okay, I think just just add one other thing. If by chance, and I would hope that they wouldn't try to move something forward at that meeting, but if there were, the single biggest question is it is a standalone? In other words, those utilities that choose to participate have some financial responsibility, or whether it's a broad responsibility of all members of Energy Northwest. Our understanding is that if they were moving ahead, it would be standalone. It would be correct. You opt in to correct. Participate as part of this. But that would be the key issue, I think, for if Steve were there to be watching for.
Yeah, excellent point.
All right, Commissioners, any other items?
Yes, just one that I will lead into our commissioner travel info. I got a notification. I don't know if anybody else did, and I asked Lisa to make a reservation for me, and it's not on our travel list for the Rewire conference in Seattle in early December. And I went last year, and I'm going as president of the association. And the association is a sponsor. I'm going this year. For anybody that wants a feel for what's going to happen in the legislative process in the upcoming year, there's quite a broad array of topics that are covered and electeds that attend and speak at this conference, and it gives you a really good feel for what the landscape might look like next winter in Olympia in the legislative process. So I just toss that out for everybody to know.
Do you know the dates on that, Randy?
Do you have that in December 10th? It's a one day. Last year I flew over on the 6 o'clock flight and flew back on the 5 o'clock flight and made the entire conference. And it's walking distance from the airport.
Oh, great. Wow. Okay.
Yeah. I might have had, I don't think I had to take a taxi. I think you can walk straight through. I'm not sure.
Do you have to sign up for a registration?
Yeah, there's a registration.
Super. Okay. Commissioners, anything else? All right. Now we move on to Commissioner Travel.
Hello, Lisa Sanders. And I do have your Rewire trip on my list, which was after I had to have this document out for the board packet, but it's on there. So we have Commissioners Arsenault and Smith coming up, headed to the Waputa Budget Committee meeting in Olympia. Commissioner Smith is headed to D.C. for the second part of the Lehigh training that he participated in earlier this year. We have Energy Northwest we need to figure out for the end of October. Commissioner Congdon is going to Women in Public Power beginning of November in Portland. November Waputa meetings are the 13th through 15th. And I think everyone is attending. Commissioner Congdon, I just need your dates so I can book your car rental.
For November.
November.
Sorry. That is November, right here. So it's 13, 14, 15, right?
Mm-hmm. If you could just forward me your flight information, I can get the car set.
I'll do that. Okay. Yes, thank you.
November 17 through 21 is the Cybersecurity Summit for Commissioner Arsenault. Beginning of December is the annual conference in Vancouver. I have rooms held for everyone. December 10th, Commissioner Smith and Arsenault are going to the Rewire Policy Conference in Seattle. And just a reminder that I need all of your expense reports returned after you sign them, the originals, please. Would you like me to start bringing the 2020 list as well? I've populated it with the dates I know so far.
That would be helpful.
We could, I think, maybe together fill in any holes that I don't have in there. So I'll do that next time.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That'd be great. Thank you.
Everything look okay for everyone and travel schedule? Okay, great. Good.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Lisa.
Ready for action items, delegated action items? Okay. So a few that are finished. Andrew Cassell provided information about the grant for battery storage. You should have received an email on that. Andy Wendell shared information on the diesel generation use. It's Tahikan. Hopefully you have received that. Mike Coleman sharing information about the upcoming fiber meetings. You got that today. I do want to ask Justin to come up and talk about one that played out a little differently than we thought it might on the tree removal at Riverwalk.
Okay. Good afternoon again. So we, I believe at your September 16th meeting, we updated you on a plan to remove some trees adjacent to Riverfront Park in Chelan. We had an adjacent landowner that had requested that action. We do have a policy in place that we evaluate such requests under to make sure we're consistent. If we do have a request to remove vegetation, really for any reason, in this particular reason, it was to improve the view shed from the adjacent property. So we did look at the property and determine that it had non-native vegetation and that it would be beneficial on many regards to remove that and then replant. And so we always anticipated replanting on that property. So we did do some outreach several weeks ago when we were here. It was mentioned, have we talked to the Chelan Rotary? So we made those contacts, had the contractor lined up and started the work. And then we were asked to stop by the city and realized that although we had kind of informally had discussions, we neglected to make sure that we had every permit in hand. And so we did not have the appropriate shoreline permit in place under the city's regulations. Even if it is non-native vegetation, we're not able to remove it unless it is deemed a hazard, unless it's hazardous to people or property. In this case, at least with the majority of the vegetation, that's not true. And so, of course, we stopped the contractor and met with the city and begged forgiveness and are on a good course now, but we are not going to complete the removal. We'll clean up what we've done, and then we'll replant. And so that has been communicated very clearly to the city and to the adjacent property owner. And certainly lots of lessons learned on this, and we're going to cross that T next time for sure. So wanted to update you on where we're at with regard to that.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you. Thank you.
I bet Randy and I are going to hear about that one, huh?
More than likely.
We have a couple others as well. From coming out of the board workshop, we had commitment that we would make sure that we made changes to the quarterly contracts update, energy resources update. That's been communicated within the senior team, so everyone's familiar with the changes that we discussed there to streamline those processes. I also had a commitment to get back to you on the split of costs between the administrative building and the service center aspects, which you heard today, so we'll consider that one done. And then we've got some more that we're still working on, and we'll be getting back to you on. So that's it.
Okay.
See, would that include the dollar square footage? I'm just curious.
It can if you wanted to. Actually, we didn't have that as a list. I was actually considering it done based on the report today, but if you want that, then take a look.
I'm curious where we are today on the administration building and then maybe one of the service centers. I mean the other building. It's not.
No? Okay. I'm going to take that as a no for now.
Yeah, take it as a no for now.
Okay.
Okay.
And now, action items from this meeting. I've got three to look at the IT storage issue and make sure that we address that either as part of the technology roadmap or at least as part of that discussion if it's not specifically on the roadmap. Second, to get all the commissioners' information about the Lady of the Lake trip that's coming up on October 19th. And third, to develop some background on NOAA Net. although I'm a little bit hesitant there because I think some of the commissioners may have more information than we have, since some of you lived through that. But we will put together something that at least gets the conversation going.
We have no public in the audience today, so no public comment. Do we need an executive session today?
We do not.
Okay. Well, I think...
Other such matters?
Yes, other such matters.
Some of you noticed that I didn't step out during the meeting. I want to thank Commissioner Bowles for that. When we took that break, my phone rang, and I got my phone call taken care of in 5 minutes. So.
Perfect.
Good. Yeah. He knew.
Happy to be of service.
All right. Well, good. Well, I think then we are adjourned.